the Graylian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From the dark hills of Appalachia, it's your number one weekly one-stop shop for the strange and the unusual. It is the Graylian Report. I'm your happy, humble host, Mr. Micah Hanks. Broadcasting live from the heart of the Moho discontinuity, hundreds of miles beneath the Earth's surface. A place where I've spent a lot of time lately. And let me tell you why. Well, we'll get to that in a moment. Let's get introductions out of the way because we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. And as you know, so little time to do it. 3 hours will go by so incredibly quickly. To my right, the man with the plan, the producer of this program, the very legendary Mr. Chris Hayes. Chris, welcome to the program.
When I was your age, Grover Cleveland was president.
And directly behind him, we have in studio our engineer, Mr. Matt Oakley. Matt, how are you?
When I was your age, I was drunk.
Oh, you guys, you're too much. You've kept me in a good mood over the last few days because it's been pretty busy. We're here at Graylian International. And I, of course, well, I shouldn't be redundant, introduce myself twice like this. But yes, if you don't know who I am the mouth of the South, the man himself, the creepy guide who's willing to take you beyond the fringes of insight. I am Micah Hanks, and of course, this is your, well, weekly Graylian Report. So welcome to the program. That said, we've got many things we're going to touch on tonight. Are aliens nice or not? We're going to touch a little bit on Homeland Security's plans to do a Minority Report-style pre-crime program. Kind of like, you know, you remember the film Minority Report based on the Philip K. Dick story and, of course, starring Tom Cruise. Well, yeah, we're talking about that, only real. We're also going to look at, of course, the Wall Street occupation. See, my mind's so addled that I can't even say occupation any longer. You know, I've seen people holding up the signs all week. We lost our job. We have found an occupation. It's quite moving. Some people are calling the Occupy Wall Street movement, kind of an answer to the Tea Party. We'll delve into that a little bit more later, but we'll also be joined during the next segment live by one of our New York correspondents, Miss Anya Briggs, who will be talking to us about the occupation. And this isn't just in New York. This is taking place in all different parts of the United States. In fact, we're going to touch on some events that occurred earlier today in Boston regarding a similar protest that took place there. But first, I do want to address a few things because, as I've alluded to already, it's been a bit of a tough week here at the Graylian Report. We are recording this live broadcast. We always go live on Tuesday evenings from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and we also always record this program so that you can have a podcast that you can download and take with you and listen to at your leisure. Well, that's our plan anyway, but right now, unfortunately, we are faced with a few problems. It has been difficult, to say the least, to get the word out about this week's program, primarily because we haven't had a website since Saturday morning. And it's funny because I've got a good friend in broadcast here in Asheville, North Carolina, Mr. Matt Matan. He's a good friend of mine. He posted on my Facebook page today. He says, "Good job, Micah." He says, "Great," because he says, "As soon as they silence you, that's when you know you're doing a good job." Now, I can't really say that we have been silenced here at the Graylian Report. I'll tell you this, though. Here's what we do know, and here's what has transpired over the last few days and what has made our lives a living hell. And while I have, locked myself down here in the bunker, trying to get this taken care of, this is what we've been going through. And first of all, before I get to any of this, I want to thank very much my producer and my engineer right here, who, in addition to all the fine folks involved with this program, have really truly helped to make this far less painful and exotic than it could have possibly been. If it hadn't been for Matt Oakley, looking into all the legalities of what was going on, if it hadn't been for, Chris Hayes trying to book guests and do show prep and things like that, while I was literally trying to get physical server issues and things like that taken care of, a lot of it stemming from bandwidth problems that we've experienced recently, we wouldn't have probably been here doing this show tonight. And it takes incredible resolve, incredible clarity of mind, and really good teamwork to be able to pull all this together. And these guys, I have to tell you, have really, really pulled through. So for that, I thank you both. But that said, people in the listening audience, the majority of you are probably wondering what the hell we're talking about.
What the hell are you talking about?
Well, we'll get to that. Here's exactly what's been going on. I was about to go on a program called Exploring Strange Phenomena with Scott Colburn on Saturday morning. In fact, I was actually joined on that program by another guest, Kathleen Marden, who is, of course, the niece of Betty and Barney Hill, the famous abductees. We've discussed her work on this program before. She co-authored the book Captured with Stanton Friedman, who's a previous guest of this program. You know, they're both friends of the Grailian Report. So Kathleen and I went on Scott Colburn's program together Saturday morning at about, I guess it was about 11 a.m. Eastern time. And lo and behold, 10 minutes before I go on the air, I got an email saying that the website, www.grailianreport.com, had been suspended by our server providers. And the reason for this was because of excessive bandwidth usage. Now, it's very interesting to me that this was, of course, the case, because the plan that I was operating under says that we are allotted what they call unlimited bandwidth. Sure, I know that that has to have some sort of limitations, but obviously, well, we were exceeding those limitations. And I'll tell you exactly what was doing it. This program, we have been getting far more traffic on this program recently than in the past, and that's a good thing. We've been, you know, the Grailian Report is getting exponentially more and more listeners every week. It's growing, it's thriving, it's doing very well. We have listeners who contact us and who participate in the program. You know, tonight you're going to be invited to participate in the program, because later, especially during hours 2 and 3, we're going to be taking live calls from you here on the studio hotline and via Skype. But that said, with the tremendous popularity that this program has been gaining in just the last few weeks. We've only been doing the program in this format for a few months now. And in just the last couple of weeks, we have been seeing so much traffic that there were literally beginning to be bandwidth issues. And my server providers, as opposed to alerting me to this fact, or, you know, to trying to, you know, to find out exactly what was causing the bandwidth problem, they literally suspended my account. They took down the Grailian Report and a number of other websites that I host, including sister sites to the Grailian Report, cultureofspirits.com, politomatic.com, and a number of others. So that said, I've been scrambling all weekend with, you know, literally on the telephone talking with tech support, emailing them. There were a number of support tickets that were uploaded and updated. But because of the restrictions placed on my account, I couldn't view the support tickets. And so finally, yesterday morning, I emailed them and I said, you know, we've got to get this worked out. They said in 2 to 4 hours I would have, you know, an answer as to what was going on. Well, I waited all day. There was no answer. This morning, I finally sent a very long, thorough email saying that I would probably have to change, you know, and I'm not going to name the company right now. I would have to change in the email I sent. I said, you know, I'm going to literally change what server is providing service for this program and for this website, unless you rectify this problem today. Not just today, but within the next few hours. This is imperative. We go live tonight. I do a radio program. And so they finally allowed me access to the server so that I could, you know, first thing we had to do, I had to remove all the audio from our server because they were saying that audio was causing the bandwidth issue. So at present, unfortunately, you will no longer be able to have access to the Grailian Report until I can get this bandwidth situation figured out. Now, that is no longer in the, you know, forever sense. That is in probably for the next few days sense, because, you know, we are resourceful people here at Grailian International. That's why I've personally locked myself in the bunker over the last few days. We're trying to figure this situation out, and once I have, you know, figured the best solution to this, we will be able to begin providing not only, you know, past editions of this program like we had been, and syndicating through Amazon and or iTunes rather, and all the different carriers, you know, that have been helping syndicate the podcast. Not only will we continue to do that, but we will also hopefully be hosting a live stream of this program that is not carried by Ustream, which is who's currently carrying our program. Ustream is wonderful, but it has obvious limitations, including some advertisements that tend to pop up at certain points, which we prefer not to have. So there is going to be an independent stream. We're going to be taking you know, basically this entire thing into our own hands and incorporating all of it into another angle of the business aspect that goes on behind the scenes here at Grailian International. This is an exciting time. It's going to be really good, but that said, it's also going to be very difficult. So what I would like to put out to you, and those listening live will hear this now, we're also going to put up a very quick, short blurb at the website that will be downloadable as a podcast, and it's going to basically express the same sort of thing. I don't think on this program I've ever gone to the listenership and said, we need your help and support. But right now, we certainly do. It's a terrible time to be asking for support, and my reason for this is because, especially when it comes to monetary support, We have the Occupy Wall Street situation going on right now. We have, you know, a presidential election coming up literally about a year from now. And really, ideally, you need to be either saving money, okay, because of the fiscal crisis and the trouble that's coming up, or you need to probably, you know, be considering, you know, whether, you know, you want to contribute money to a political campaign or a candidate, you know, or an incumbent, whatever, you know, of your choice. There are a lot of things that could be done with money. And that said, you know, it would humble me, of course, that people would think enough of the Graylian Report to make donations to us. I don't even like to ask for monetary supplements from the listenership, but that's just the truth, is that unfortunately it takes a lot of money to keep a program like this going. A lot of podcasts charge for their downloads, and that upsets people. You know, we've always tried to provide our podcast as a free download that you can take with you and that you can listen to for free every week. And therefore, I'd like to keep it that way. We don't want to start charging for any of the services that we provide, but literally it's sometimes hundreds of dollars in order to maintain the operation. I mean, looking at the microphones that we're using here, we have the consoles, the computers here in the studio that we have, and those aren't including the servers that host the websites, the audio streams that hold the audio that you're able to download. You know, that stuff doesn't just go floating around on the web. You know, we have to actually have physical space that that stuff is stored. And so if you're listening to this program, I would like to just tell you, in the next few hours, we hope to have a link up at GraylianReport.com, www.GRAILIENReport.com. And it's going to include a PayPal donate button where you can make donations to the Graylian Report. I'm not going to ask you to donate a certain amount. I'm just going to say, you know, if your heart leads you to do so and you find the program content on this program valuable and of merit and maybe even helpful, enriching in your life from week to week, each week when we are able to spend 3 hours with you. What I ask you is to consider making at least a small contribution. That will help us greatly in our effort to continue to provide free content for you that we hope not only entertains but also enlightens. You know, we're very lighthearted with a lot of the content that we feature on the program, but, you know, we also do seek to provide a lot of thought-provoking and insightful philosophical and you know, science-oriented commentary in addition to the strange mysteries that I think that bring us all together in this forum, the things that we all find very interesting. We also like to talk about real-world events, and we're about to touch on this Wall Street I don't know why I can't say occupation tonight.
Do you need Chris to take over for you?
I think I'm so emotionally ravaged after this past week that, yes, producer Chris Hayes is probably going to have to take over for me here any moment now. But before I completely come to my wit's end, I do want to thank everyone who has shown support over the last few days. Our website is back up. The folks who provide our server space have been, and I'm sure a lot of people who've been going to the website, you know, have, as opposed to seeing the Graylian Report, have seen a "this site has been suspended" page. So they all, you already probably know who the company is, but, you know, I know that they have done what they could, although maybe I don't think they acted in the most timely manner. They certainly did what I feel they could do to try and rectify the situation. And I learned a couple of valuable lessons. One of those is, well, popularity has its price. This show has been doing incredibly well. I want to thank everybody listening right now, or whoever ends up downloading this as a podcast, because it will become available eventually, hopefully within the next few days. I want to thank everybody who's involved in this program and the listening audience on that end of things. Thank you so much for your, you know, your attention and for enjoying this program and making it a part of your weekly routine. For the support, for the emails, you know, that we've received and the other notifications from people thanking us for what we provide and hoping that we'll get things straightened out. I also want to thank the staff here. I've already thanked Matt and Chris and, of course, all the other people who are involved in this program, you know, who've really made it a potentially difficult time a whole lot easier on us. And then, you know, I also just want to say that, you know, although it's something that we enjoy providing, we do realize that there are a lot of important issues on the table. And that's why, in addition to something like UFOs, which is a very common subject on this program, something I think is of utmost importance in the world today, we do try and talk on current events and things like that. You know, for instance, we lost a visionary this week. I think in terms of all people who are users of Mac products and, you know, iPhones and things like that, it's been a tough week for all of us. And of course, I'm discussing right now the passing of Steve Jobs. He was on the cover of Time magazine this past week. He is a he's a very, very, very well. I mean, what do you call Steve Jobs? I mean, he was nothing short of being a visionary. He really was, and a lot of us realized when he resigned. You know, as I guess his position was what CEO, I guess, of Apple. When he resigned, you know, I think a lot of us knew there was something going on, and indeed, you know, complications stemming from cancer eventually claimed his life. Chris, do we have a? I think we have some basic commentary on Steve Jobs here that you'd like to provide. And with that, I just want to say thanks again. You know, visit the Grayling Report website. We will have a donate button. If you'd like to try and help us out, that would be immensely helpful. Without further ado, Steve Jobs, courtesy of Chris Hayes, producer of the Grayling Report.
Yes, this is an article from the Kansas City Star, actually, titled "Steve Jobs' Death Underscores the Rise of the I Generation." And that's incredibly true. If there ever had been any doubt, the death of Steve Jobs has made one thing abundantly clear. The me generation is dead. The I generation rules. Jobs and the products he masterminded at Apple created a world in which a generation of young people has grown up knowing that the I's have it. iPods, iTunes, iPhones, iPads. Anyone born since the mid-1990s has lived a life influenced from the beginning by Jobs in ways subtle and not.
Can we just insert right here? I remember being in grade school, you know. What were the first computers that we used back in the 1980s, you know? They were Apples, you know. Literally, this guy was in our classrooms growing up. I guess I'm dating myself here, and I always joke that that's probably not legal in most states, but no, truly. You know, when I was a kid growing up and I was in school, this man's direct influence on technology and society was helping me learn. And right now, in the Grayling bunker here sitting in front of me, I actually have a MacBook, you know. We have iPhones all around us, iPads, and it's, you know, we live in a society that it's riddled with this man's influence, and his passage is, it's not just a milestone in terms of technology and culture and the like. I mean, you know, we have really, really lost a visionary. Very few people, I would say, the same of this man. I'm not putting him on a pedestal, you know. I'm not saying we should worship the guy, but I don't think that anyone would disagree that we should have profound respect for him and what he did. You know, Chris, what was the first time that you recall ever, you know, being in the presence of a Macintosh computer? Did you have those in school when you were growing up also?
Yes, in elementary all the way through high school. Actually, no, in high school we didn't have Apples. But, middle and elementary school, there
just
were
oranges.
There were apples.
Yeah. I bet he had oranges. That's right.
Oh, you're so clever.
Yeah, he's a clever one. Yes. Watch out for that, Matt Oakley. Actually, you know what? The clock's caught us here. But I do want to say, you know, in addition to, you know, expressing thanks to all the listeners, you know, during this incredibly difficult week, you know, I wouldn't have been able to get all this stuff worked out without my trusty MacBook here. And, well, you know, I also am very thankful for the contributions and the influence that Steve Jobs had on society. You know, he is truly, he was a visionary, and he certainly will be missed. But one thing you won't have to miss, no matter what form it may come or go in, is the Grayling Report. And of course, I'm your very happy host. I'm very happy to be here. After spending so much time underground this week, it's good to get out a little bit. I am Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Chris Hayes and Matt Oakley. When we come back, we'll be joined by my good friend Anya Briggs, live from New York, who will be discussing with us the Wall Street you know, that thing. Okay, we'll come back after this. It's the Grayling Report.
Want to have some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. Listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the InceptionRadioNetwork.com. We'll see you there.
Welcome back to the program, Occupying the Hollow Earth, and of course, your minds. We are the Grayling Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Chris Hayes and Matt Oakley. Well, we got all the serious stuff out of the way. And again, you know, thank you so much to all of you out there, all you insightful individuals. It's people like you that we want in our lives more and more. But I have to say, it's not just you guys. There are a lot of people who I'd like to hear more and more from. And joining us here by phone in just a moment, we will be speaking with one of those individuals. We'll be discussing the Wall Street protests, which a lot of folks prefer to call an occupation and not a protest. They differentiate between the two. So our New York field correspondent will be discussing that with us. But first, I do want to touch on this a little bit. It's not just New York where this has been going on. As a matter of fact, USA Today featured the story earlier today talking about, well, similar activity that's been occurring recently in Boston. It's becoming a countrywide movement. People are tired of the what they think is an unfair and outrageous disparity in terms of the classes and in terms of the banking system. And it's centered on, you know, the focus is centered around Wall Street, and people are protesting this. And some are calling it an answer to the Tea Party. You know, some of the presidential candidates, you know, potentials at least, like Herman Cain, have been telling these people, stop wasting your time, get down there and protest in front of the White House. You know, my personal feelings are this. I have probably made a lot of people angry in the past when I've said though I don't consider myself a member, I have supported the Tea Party. I'm going to tell you the same thing right now and piss off a bunch more people. I support these protesters, you know, in New York and other parts of the country protesting the Wall Street situation. And the reason why is because this is a fundamental right that we as citizens have. And if you don't like the way that government is going, you've got to express your rights as citizens, your right to freedom of speech and expression and association. And that's what these people are out there doing. Okay, this is First Amendment stuff, and this is important. And, you know, I may not always, it wasn't truly Voltaire that said this, but the quote is often appended to him, that I may not agree with you, but I will defend to my dying breath your right to believe what you choose to believe. And I feel very much the same for these people, whether they be Tea Party protesters or the Wall Street occupiers. You know, what they do is meaningful and it is important. And unfortunately, we're beginning to see what I was very afraid of, that there is, you know, there are beginning to be maybe not violent confrontations, but at very least physical confrontations. Earlier today, this was reported by USA Today, 11 years before she joined demonstrators in New York City's Foley Square to protest against corporate greed and wealth disparities, Patton, speaking about Stacey Patton, who is one of the occupiers, and this is just one person who's out there occupying. She said, I never thought I'd be a part of something like this, she told the journalist, who I presume is probably Dwayne Wickham. Not after the price she paid for her snap decision to join the protest in 2000. Though that past haunts her, Patton said she worries about the future. I got out there because I still believe in democracy, she explained. I think this is a movement about economic justice. I think it's pretty obvious that people are protesting, or why they're protesting and what they're protesting. They are protesting greed, recklessness, illegal behavior, home foreclosures, and rising student debt. We can't get jobs, but we have mounting student debt. Patton said the Occupy Wall Street protest is the counter-narrative to the Tea Party movement, which is demanding that government become smaller and less involved in people's lives. But many Wall Street protesters want government to do more to end home foreclosures, generate jobs, and punish those whose greed brought this nation to the verge of economic collapse. Now, like I said a moment ago, I support all forms of protest. With the exception of violent protest, there's not a need for violence. We do not need violence, whether that be, you know, police or other law enforcement officers and officials, you know, exacting force and unsavory activity against people who are out there protesting. By the same token, we also don't need people who, the protesters themselves, you know, taking matters into their hands and using weapons and things like that, looting, illegal activity. You know, peaceful protest is part of our right. Okay, as a citizenry. That I will always support. I also think that there are a lot of underlying issues. One of them is the Federal Reserve. We'll get to that in a moment, but right now we are joined by phone live from New York by the very lovely Miss Anya Briggs. Anya, how are you?
I'm well, Micah. I'm listening to your show online, and it sounds fabulous, and I hope you find the solutions you've been looking for.
Well, you know, I tell you, I hope sincerely that you'll be able to help with that, and I should go ahead and just tell folks that if you're not familiar with Anya Briggs, now she's a personal friend of mine, and of course she's being our New York field correspondent for this evening, especially since a lot of this activity with the Wall Street thing has been centered around New York. But Anya, in addition to to being a New York correspondent for us, she also is one of the most legitimate and real-deal psychics that you'll ever come across. Anya, I hope you don't mind me putting that out there, because I know that the nature of the conversation is a little different tonight, but, you know, I mean, that is what you do professionally, and you're damn good at it.
Yes. Well, thank you, Mike. I do appreciate the plug. I swear I wasn't expecting that, but it is appreciated nonetheless.
Oh, expect the unexpected with me, you know.
I'm very happy to be here tonight.
Well, I'm always very happy to have you on the program. So now, being in New York as you are, you know, this has been really a hotbed for this movement over the last several days. Tell us a little bit about what you've observed. I mean, have you been out there as part of the protest, or have you just been kind of observing it? I noticed on your Facebook page you had, you know, the one of the posters up. So tell us what's going on your end with regard to all this.
Yeah, I really have been observing more or less and just sort of silently participating. I haven't been going to the marches during the day, but at night I've been able to stop by pretty much on a semi-regular basis, and I wanted to see for myself what the reality of the situation was and speak to the people myself, as opposed to listening to the media hype on either side when there is media coverage,
yeah, right,
or otherwise.
Exactly, yeah, this is not the like thereof, huh?
Exactly. So I was keenly aware of this. I have a long history of activism myself. I was personally arrested for protesting the very first Gulf War in the early 90s. And so activism is nothing new in my family, and I'm all for the right to public assembly and participatory democracy. So it was kind of thrilling to see all these people together as one. You know, all problems aside, and many people have criticisms of the movement, at the very least, I would be in agreement with you that they have an absolute right to public assembly in spite of what the Patriot Act would say otherwise, that
sure,
the powers would be sort of deign when and how our public assembly should be not. According to civil rights lawyers, they have absolutely every right to take over Zuccotti Park, and it's absolutely constitutional and protected by the Constitution, so bully for them.
Mm-hmm.
The opinions are very wide and varied, again, contrary to what a lot of perhaps you could say paleoconservatives on the web from Texas, who shall remain nameless, are saying, is that it's being co-opted by George Soros and other people. That may be the case through proxy, maybe with organizations like MoveOn.org or other places that are being funded by him sort of on the side.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the group itself goes, it is leaderless, and that's for a reason, and I think for a good reason. I would take issue with the fact that it lacks a coherent message and lacks a coherent leader. You know, I was just reading, and I really was doing this earlier, I just read the Declaration of Independence today as a refresher, and the statements, though pointed towards King George, are, you know, not very vague to me, and they don't seem very vague in comparison to the statements of the General Assembly's statements. It seems that they've modeled it after the Declaration of Independence in their writing style. And, I mean, I don't know how much more specific you can get in terms of, you look at the Declaration of Independence and it says, no taxation without representation effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Statements of the General Assembly are, we don't want to have the corporate infrastructure having undue influence on the political, you know, on the political machine. Again, this is a nascent group. This is not a group that's been together very long. It's only been several weeks. And yes, we do have to pay attention to big corporations and also infiltration of intelligence agencies, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to co-opt the message. But right now, I think people are just trying to find their voice. And I personally, although I took issue with some of the statements of the General Assembly's declaration, you know, I think they got off track a little bit talking about how animals get treated. And even though I'm in agreement with it, I think they should stay on point a little
sure.
bit more. But
yeah.
But they're finding their voice. There were Ron Paul people there, highly organized. There were anarchists. There were communists. There were socialists. There were conservatives. There were military people. There were grannies. There were priests. There were rabbis. I mean, there was just every race, every representation, every socioeconomic representation there. And in fact, on one evening, I had a really impassioned, great conversation with a woman who was standing there with a sign that said, as a member of the 1%, it would be an honor for me to pay a certain amount of taxes if it means that the other 99% get a chance to have a fair wage and just a leg up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And she also was very condemning of the banking system as a whole. And ironically enough, she made a very good living, and she worked for Wall Street. She worked for a corporation on Wall Street. And,
oh, wow.
And what better way than to take it to the horse's mouth? And she was specifically there because she wanted to counter the media representation of them as this smelly hippies just standing around looking for a job. Most of the kids, there are a pretty young group of kids who are really mostly camping out, but every square inch of the park is organized and filled with sleeping bags and tarps, and
mm-hmm.
they keep the walkways clear. The place is spotless. There are volunteers who clean up trash on a minute-by-minute basis. They have their own water supply system. They have their own recycling of water supply. They have an ecologically minded water. I don't know what you call it, but it's a setup where they take the dishwater that they use for cleaning their dishes and so forth and for cooking, and they recycle it and
mm-hmm.
And water the plants in the park with it.
Oh wow!
So
okay.
So for anyone who I would challenge anyone who has not yet been to Zuccotti Park, and again I can't speak for the rest of the Occupy movement around the United States and abroad, but for New York City proper, this is an organized group. This is an organized, like-minded group of people who are, for the most part, setting aside their differences and so that parity can be reached and that some kind of established idea can be, you know, created. I think there really is this sort of, I think it was fomented out of desperation.
Well, sure.
And they're doing this out of a sense of desperation because they don't have any other options.
Absolutely.
I would challenge any of these people walking by and screaming at them saying, get a job. Most of them do have a job. They're underemployed and they're working for, you know, crap wages and no security and no benefits.
Yeah, whatever anyone...
They have no safety net.
Well, sure. And whatever anyone wants to say about how they may have gone about it, you know, I think that the fundamental problem here is that these people don't feel like there is much else they can do to express their concern about the, you know, state of the, you know, the fiscal situation here in the United States. And true, you know, I mean, some of the news story programs and the talk radio programs have been talking about, you know, some of the, you know, especially the youth that have been going down there, and it's become something of a social scene for them, you know. But that's expected
sure.
anywhere. People always want to try and find something that they feel like they can be a part of, or they want to be a part of something bigger than they are. But, you know, for those children, rather than to demonize them, and I say children, really we're probably talking about people in their late teens, early 20s here, but so a lot of them are going to be adults by definition. But these people, hopefully, I would think, if they go down there without a cause and without any kind of attachment to what's going on, and they're around these people enough, maybe those who are around them will, you know, exert, you know, a positive influence, educate these people, these young people, and help them come to a better understanding of the real problems we face here in America today. And like you said, it's interesting that there is so broad a demographic. I mean, to me, you know, I know a lot of people...
It's fantastic. It's a really broad base. But on the whole, one concern I would mention, and this is purely subjective, it isn't from the mouths of anyone that I spoke there, but one thing I did notice is a lack of an understanding of how the banks are run.
Mm-hmm.
And a lack of a sort of general understanding of financial education in terms of how the banking system was created and who was involved with it.
Oh, yeah.
And that there's a large component that goes unmentioned about these highly organized groups of individuals who, well, many of them are, it's probably not a surprise to you and your listening audience, but many of them are Freemasons, many of them are in sort of secret societies and things of that nature. I did notice on one sign for a Ron Paul supporter that was starting to be mentioned, but for the most part there was a general ignorance of that aspect of things, and not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but I think we need to have an honest sort of teach-in perhaps for some of these younger people or people who might not be aware of it, of
mm-hmm.
how money really has been created in this country and who distributes it and why, and beyond ending the Fed, beyond simply a play card that just says end the Fed.
Well, certainly.
There can be a dialogue that would be established amongst anyone, an anarchist, a communist, a socialist, the hard right Republican, et cetera, that would make sense. It's common sense issues that I think people are trying to get back to. And I don't think people should be punished for that. I don't think they should be chastised for just wanting sanity.
Well, yeah.
And common sense.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've got a lot of friends these days, Anya, who it just kills me. They have been criticized and demonized, even by law enforcement officials, for being, you know, what they consider to be patriotic Americans. Patriotic and patriotism, those are dirty words in the America of today. Where did we get so far off that, you know, the common ground, the common sense, you know, I consider myself a middle of the road kind of person. I listen to both sides when it makes sense, you know, when it's common sense and when there's actual, you know, intelligence and knowledge behind the points and the opinions being expressed. But the thing is when do we get so far away from that, that, you know, that people aren't allowed to express what they consider patriotism? And if they do so, they go on a government watch list. I you know, my mind reels at the thought of how many government watch lists you and I are on, Anya.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, no question. Just call us being monitored by yeah. various and sundry agencies, for sure, yeah. Well, and I expressed that concern with some of the members of the crowd as well. There is a naivete with some of the younger kids there about that there was definitely a federal agency presence, no question in my mind. And, I mean, just my little psychic feelers, I knew there were sort of infiltrators and agent provocateurs just waiting to pounce on the right moment. But the counterbalance to that is that these people are dedicated, and they are showing their dedication by walking their walk and not just talking their talk. They're living what they promised. They said mm-hmm. they're doing what they said they would do. And they are dead serious. And they are slowly becoming aware of this. I heard an interview with the rapper Immortal Technique on Russia Today, and he was mentioning that. And his concerns, I think, were fairly placed as well. And I think by putting it out there, and his place of influence is going to make these people more aware of the pitfalls and potential sort of traps that agencies and mainstream media and so forth will try and do. And I think you're going to see these kids becoming much more sophisticated media-wise. Yeah. They already are more organized than any other group of protesters I can think of, just based on their media presence alone online. I think they're just going to take. I think the empowering aspect of this protest is different than other protests in the past, is that they've really galvanized the use of media and are really not afraid to utilize social media and media itself to create momentum very quickly, very rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting. That's exciting to see as well. And I find optimism in seeing that it's a leaderless movement. I do believe that there are going to be people come to the forefront, and it'll be interesting to see what they have to say as they form their language and they form their message.
Well, absolutely.
I think we have to give them a break a little bit. I think people are being a little too harsh on them, and it should. And I agree that it's coming from a sense of trying to be protective, somewhat of the participatory democracy aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as that keeps happening, I see it as something evolving that can be a potentially a really beautiful thing.
Certainly. I don't think that everyone who begins a journey knows exactly where they're headed from the outset, but hopefully as they travel along, they learn more and more about where they will eventually end up. And that, I think, is very much the case,
yeah.
At least on a philosophical note, with the Wall Street occupation. You know, you've done such a fantastic job giving, you know, a really good, you know, I think truly a very non-biased, you know, kind of filler in terms of what's going on up there. And a lot of this isn't being covered by the media. You know, when we see so much of the, you know, the hard left and right punditry, you know, this is the best thing since sliced bread, or, you know, these hippies need to get out of there, get down to the White House and protest and everything. When really they're on the street, what I'm getting from you, Anya, is that that's not really so much what's going on, that this isn't, you know, people who are really in favor, really to the extreme one way or another, that these people are all kind of coming together from different areas, and that they really all want, well, if they don't know entirely what they want, they're all there with one purpose, to try and learn and to try and understand. You know, what is it do you think that would help sharpen their message, especially with regard to the banking system and some of the things that you alluded to there?
Well, I think they have to believe that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and they have to believe that they are empowered by this, and it's a process. I mean, Rome wasn't built in a day. And so, you know, I'm still grappling with issues of how money is issued and what the system is set up as. And it's something that I have to force myself to learn about. It's not something that people that are working 12 hours at crap jobs can really, put their energy into. But one other thing I wish to say about the Occupy Wall Street encampment, if you wish to call it that,
mm-hmm.
is that they have their own library. And they have quite a good library. They have a list of free books that you can just take, and a lot of it is about the financial system. So you know, besides protesting all day, there's lots of downtime, and people are standing around and talking, and it's sort of in the proverbial town square. And again, I don't understand why people are chastising that. There's a free exchange of ideas going around, in addition to a very well-read library that they have established for people to just sort of take as they please, as a sort of communal offering. And there does seem to be more emphasis on ending the Fed lately. I'm just speaking of when I go down there and see the signs and listen to people talking and talk to the people myself, there does seem to be slowly bleeding into this conversation a necessity of understanding the end of the Federal Reserve as we know it. And you know, how can that not be a positive thing? In my opinion, I see that as a positive.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you completely. As a matter of fact, maybe we could talk about that real quick before we let you go. You know, the end of the Fed thing. You know, of course, Ron Paul, Texas congressman, right now he's running, you know, as a Republican potential candidate for the presidency in 2012. Ron Paul, you know, who I've met, in fact, you know, I like Ron Paul myself. I think he's a very middle-of-the-road guy, and I think he's playing by the rules of the system today that you have to basically pick a, you know, a name, and if you want to be elected, you have to have one of those, you know, those letters beside your name. I think if in the absence of the two-party system, that he probably wouldn't use that Republican mind at all. But the truth of the matter is that he wrote a book called End the Fed. But these audit the Fed measures have been, you know, they've received tremendous bipartisan support in the House and Senate. You know, I remind people that in the Senate, it was Bernie Sanders, you know, a socialist from Vermont, of course, who was co-sponsoring that in the Senate. And then we had Ron Paul, who's considered, you know, one of the more conservative Republicans, who's sponsoring that in the House, the Congress. And so, nonetheless, somehow with a lot of bipartisan support, and I got very involved in that, the audit the Fed measures, somehow that ended up getting shot down and broken apart and really, really reduced maximum, you know, from the maximum potency had the bill been passed as intended. We don't have a lot of transparency with the Federal Reserve. A lot of people don't realize that they are not a branch of the government, but an independent organization that basically, you know, has the complete ability to control and manipulate our currency, a fiat currency that's not backed by any tangible wealth, gold, silver, or anything else, and that the policy of the Fed, in my opinion, has done more to strangle the capitalist system here in the United States than anything else. I mean, you know, do you feel like it's indeed as dangerous as I've made it out to be? And do you feel that there's merit to the move towards the end the Fed thing, like you've talked about seeing so much there?
Oh, absolutely. I don't see how a complete restructuring of the financial situation would not happen at this point. I feel like it's inevitable. I feel like the groundswell is necessary. It's hand in glove with the participatory democracy that I'm describing goes hand in glove with this. I think eventually the natural conclusion is going to be that people are not going to stop shy of saying, and the Fed, I think that's going to become more germane. And I'm sorry, you were cutting out a little bit there online. There was some weird interference online, but it's not.
Yeah, you gotta love the internet broadcasts. Oh, goodness gracious. I mean, you know, my website's been down for several days, so I'm sure it's probably just, you know, one of these clandestine government organizations trying to keep us from being able, you know, they tend to do that when we chat and everything. No, but I mean, you know, all I basically said was, you know, do you think that the protesters and their interest in the Fed movement and the talk about that, do you think that that's, you know, legitimate? And do you think that that is really an underlying situation in terms of the Wall Street or the banking or the you know, the fiscal responsibility that the country needs to probably get a foothold on again? I personally do, in my opinion.
Yeah, Mike, I would absolutely agree that the anti-corporatist sensibilities that these people are expressing definitely goes hand in glove with the and the Fed movement. And as more people educate themselves, I think they're going to connect the dots more and more towards the natural conclusion, which would be to end the Federal Reserve. I was just watching an Alex Jones video today where he was doing his and the Fed protests, I believe it was in Dallas, perhaps, maybe it was Houston. And he was recounting a really funny story about how the cops showed up and asked him to leave private property because it was a private institution. And he was sort of a wink and a nod, and the cops were sort of winking and nodding along with him because they were fully aware of the irony of the situation that sort of like the general public has no idea that this is a private institution. And he said, can I make sure that I get that on camera and on tape that you could repeat what you just said? You're asking us to remove ourselves from private property. And the cops basically were smiling and saying, yes. you need to move. This is private property, sir.
Oh, wow.
So that's essentially, I think people are catching on pretty quickly. And not to disparage Jones, I think he's doing a great public service, but we're all in this together, and no one person has any, you know, claim to this. I would be very nervous if somebody starts having a personal claim to any of the Occupy movements or any of the End the Fed or any of that. I mean, obviously, Ron Paul's one of the most outspoken, and obviously he wrote a book about it, so you could definitely tip your hat to the gentleman.
Sure.
But for the most part, and I believe Representative Paul would be in agreement with me about this, as he seems a rather genuinely selfless individual and a service to others type, that we are all in this together, and we have to work together to find solutions to be in a truly participatory democracy. So that would include some, yes, flaky opinions, and yes, naive opinions,
sure,
and yes, contrarian opinions, but eventually it works itself out. This is a giant social experiment, and I, at the end of the day, I'm a Jeffersonian in the sense that he had, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, in the course of human events, if the government you don't like is betraying you and corrupted and rotten from within, it's absolutely you're right, pretty much every 20 years or so to rise up and change it.
That's true.
That's the cycle of how things occur. So let that be what it is, and God bless and go with God on that. And I mean, I'm excited by this. I'm a little nervous. I'm a little concerned, and I just watch it with an eager eye every day, and I'm monitoring the situation as much as I can. And I hope for the best. I hope it turns out well.
Well, Anya, thank you so much, for coming on the program. I think that, this is, for me, it's been a window into what's really been going on up there. And I know it's not just New York. It's all around the country. But, it's really kind of blossomed there in New York, centered around Wall Street as it is. And so your opinions and your insight and your observations are, as always, invaluable. Next time we have you on the program, hopefully we'll be talking some psychic predictions. But you know what? As a political correspondent, you do a fantastic job also. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you so much, Mike. I'm sorry you're cutting out a little bit there, but I'm signing off now.
Yeah.
I really appreciate time to speak, and I'm going to eagerly listen to the rest of your show tonight.
Excellent. Well, you and I will be in touch again very soon. All right, you have a good night tonight, Anya, and we will be in touch again very soon. And keep up the good work up there, okay?
Thank you so much, Micah. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, that wraps it up with Anya Briggs. Boy, I tell you what, she's really one in a million, folks. And when we have her back on the program in the future, we will be discussing some of her incredible intuitive abilities. I'd like to be able to sit down. I could do an entire segment with her just about that. But we are short on a break right now, so we've got to run out real quick. When we come back, we're going to we'll maybe get a little bit more commentary in here, maybe even try and squeeze a phone call in. I don't know if we really have time for one right now, but either way, we'll certainly have time during the next hour. Really incredible how quickly an hour can go by, huh? So when we come back, we will continue delving this and other mysteries. Trust me, the way that the country is going right now, the mismanagement going on, not just at Wall Street, in Washington, too. It's a real mystery to me. I'm Micah Hangst. We'll be back right after this here on the Gralian Report.
Hey parents, introducing the Communicizer. Go from boring old man speak.
I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
I love you, Dad.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
from the high mountains of Appalachia. It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
I want to thank Anya Briggs again, our New York field correspondent, for coming on the program and giving us that very insightful coverage live from the Big Apple about what's been going on with regard to the Wall Street occupation. But, you know, it's not just New York. I mean, this story right here, USA Today featured earlier, Boston police arrested 50 Occupy Boston protesters. This actually came via the AP. More than 50 protesters from the Occupy Boston movement were arrested early Tuesday after they ignored warnings to move from a downtown greenway near where they had been camped out for more than a week. Police spokesman Jamie Kennelly said that the arrests began about 1:30 a.m. Tuesday and were mostly for trespassing. The protesters, part of the National Occupy Wall Street movement, had tried to expand from their original site in Dewey Square to a second site across the street along the Rose Kennedy Greenway. A local conservancy group recently planted $150,000 worth of shrubs along the greenway, and officials said they were concerned about damages that might be incurred there. Boston police had warned protesters for several hours that they would have to return to Dewey Square, where a tent city has been steadily growing, and issued leaflets saying protesters could not occupy the greenway. And early Tuesday, about 10 police officers patrolled the greenway, some with dogs. Protesters who went to a nearby police station to bail people out did not find anyone there. And by 4 a.m., they'd returned to their encampment to discuss how to raise $4,000 in bail money. Boston resident Matt Hollander, age 25, said a group of veterans carrying American flags were standing in between police and the protesters when officers began to advance on them. One veteran, he said, was pushed to the ground, and a group of protesters fell in a heap. If they wanted to arrest us, they could have done that without pushing us, without tramping all over the flag, Hollander said. Another protester, Shaudine Vatan, 21, of Arlington, Massachusetts, said that she was not surprised at what happened. We're being seen as a legitimate organization, she said. People are panicking and trying to get us out of here. You know, if there is indeed merit to what they're doing, and I think that it's a multi-level, a very complex situation, just as Ms. Briggs described during the last segment, then I think that they have there's no question about their right to be where they are. But, you know, I don't like hearing stories about, you know, veterans carrying flags being pushed down and trampled by police officers in the area. You know, I think I hope that all the protesters will continue to show nonviolent, they need to be dedicated to their cause. And so I guess dedication is probably the word I'm looking for here. But they can't cave when or if physical force is used against them. Violence is not the answer. By the same token, when they show that kind of respect to law enforcement or anyone else, I sincerely hope that they will be shown the same. There is no reason for violence. And again, I don't like hearing stories when I'm being told about veterans carrying flags being trampled all over and the like. That's just nonsense. I'm Micah Hanks. When we come back, we're going to be taking your calls, and we'll be diving into a few different subjects. We'll go a little bit more esoteric during hour two of this week's edition of the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Chris Hayes and Matt Oakley. More on the strange and the unusual when we come back right after this.
Hey guys, Jamie Havoc in here for UFO Mag. Do you want to receive the best writing there is in ufology, the best writers, editors, and flat out the best magazine that ufology can offer? If so, I highly recommend UFO Magazine. You can check it out at ufomag.com. And if you mention that you heard this on radio, you can get 6 issues for $19.95. Check it out, ufomag.com. Don't miss out. And keep up to date on the hottest topics in ufology. For UFO Mag, this is Jamie Havkin.
Hi, Bob Tarmac for InceptionRadioNetwork.com. I'm going to clue you into the show that I listen to every single week. It's Inception Radio with Jamie Havoc. It airs Friday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Jamie always brings on new guests every single week on a variety of topics. UFOs, paranormal, time travel, conspiracy theory, it's everything. And Jamie covers it in depth. When is it again? Friday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. I'll see you there. Theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
Welcome to Hour 2 of this week's edition of the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, your very happy host, the Mouth of the South, joined in studio by the fantastic engineering and production staff here at Graylian International Headquarters. Mr. Chris Hayes, our producer, and engineer Matt Oakley, rocking it out here on the airways every Tuesday night from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And blowing your mind, well, into the next day, at very least. Sometimes into the next 2 days. Hell, the entire next week, for all I care.
Until we come back on.
Yeah, and it's going to have to last you for a while, because right now, with the state of affairs as they are here in Graylian world, the twilight world that is the Graylian land here, in the Moho discontinuity, hundreds of miles beneath the Earth's surface, well, it can become a little difficult, especially when we have fiscal concerns of our own. You know, I mean, with the Occupy Wall Street situation going on, and the debt crisis, and the Federal Reserve, and ending the Fed, and all this stuff going on, you know, again, it's the worst time in the world for me to feel like, like we are literally just floundering over here at Graylian International. No, we're not. We're not. We've been doing really well. And then my server providers contacted me and said, yes, we're going to have to cancel your service unless we get this bandwidth situation under control. In fact, we haven't notified you. We just went ahead and took your website down. And so for the last 4 days, God bless your little souls out there, you had to go without the Graylian Report for damn near 4 days. That's just not acceptable. After much tearful consideration on my part, it was difficult, But I came to this conclusion that, no man is an island, and no Graylian is an island either. And so we'll do what we have to do to get things up on, to where we can offer not just the podcast, but to improve the quality of the programming that we have for you each week.
I thought we were perfect.
A lot of people do think we're perfect. We are a large operation here, but, you know, the thing is that it's not that large, just to be honest. But it is concise, and we are serious. We have a team of professionals who work very hard. But, it sometimes costs thousands of dollars a month to be able to provide things, you know, especially the way that I like to do it. Now, I don't often end up, we don't often end up putting out thousands of dollars a month, but you got to take into consideration server costs and web hosting, all this stuff. One of our listeners asked, they said, well, if there was a PayPal donate button on your website, we would, we would be happy to donate. And the reason I don't have a PayPal button up right now is because, literally, we were working all day getting the website back up before tonight's program so that we would at least have a website that we could send people to. And I'm very proud to be able to say that, yes, we are back online. You know, my good friend Matt Matan sent me the email today and said, trust me, buddy, you haven't known success until someone's tried to take you down. When they're trying to keep you from doing what you do, that's when you know that you are succeeding. I wish I could say that there was some sort of grand conspiracy. I wish I could say that some clandestine government group that had been monitoring my phone calls back and forth to Anya Briggs in New York, had been the group that took us down. That doesn't seem to be the case in this instance. In truth, I think we were our own worst enemy, and there were a number of downloads. There were also some kind of weird IP address issues and some weird things like that in the actual access data that I was monitoring, because I was able to finally get directly onto my server and go to the folder that stores access data about, who's going to the website, what they're downloading, what they're viewing. I'll just say that the last edition of this program was tremendously popular, but we got so many hits, and there were some situations where I think people's data collectors, and their MP3 players and things were repeatedly connecting to the server, and that probably only exacerbated the problem, which was again pretty big to begin with, because people, of course, they want to access the server and download the show and listen to it. which we provide for free. So what we'll hope to do is in the next, you know, hopefully in just the next few hours, be able to get a PayPal button up on GraylianReport.com. I've had one in the past, and I don't know really why there's not one there now. But we've never needed one like we need one right now. But that said, all that aside, we'll get to something fun and something interesting that you'll enjoy discussing. It is the Graylian Report. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Wall Street situation because that is something that is very timely and very important. And without dealing with these timely, important, often fiscally oriented issues, we aren't able to, you know, be able to comment on the other stuff, the fun stuff that we like talking about on this program. And this program is by no means just a fun stuff program. We talk about a lot of serious crap. Trust me, I know. Because I'm the guy who's digging through the, well, digging through the doggy doo-doo out there to find the important crap that we can bring to the program and bring to the table here at the Graylian Report each week. And, of course, we, just as much, I mean, of those who aren't able to help, you know, this operation financially through donations and things like that, you know, so many of you send news stories and things along, you know, questions, commentary, even very constructive criticisms. You know, all that helps so much, and for that we are indeed truly thankful. So without further ado, one thing that I did want to touch on during tonight's program is this, and this sounds like something out of a sci-fi film. In fact, this sounds like something just like what you see in the movie with Tom Cruise called Minority Report. This was at CNET.com this week. When I saw this next story, I think as Glenn Beck says, there was blood shooting out of my eyes. I mean, truly, this story, you know, oh, you laugh now, Matt. What?
But wait till I have to clean it up.
Yeah, that's right. Matt is also the janitor in addition to being the engineer. Matt is the janitor. He's Joe the whistling janitor.
It's just because I sleep in here.
You sleep in the studio, yeah. Oh, man, you've been spending too much time at work, haven't you? But
really just underground in general.
Yeah, exactly. You need a tan. You really do need a tan, Matt. But this story, sorry if you had to clean up a mess, you know, after I saw this, Matt. Homeland Security moves forward with pre-crime detection. Do you remember the film Minority Report? If you don't, you might refresh yourself real quickly because we're going to be taking calls about this. I want to hear what you have to say. To call into the program, that's 828-398-4886. Again, that's 828-398-4886 to call in here on the studio line. And if you'd like to join the program via Skype, you can reach us also. Skype ID, Graylian Report. That's G-R-A-L-I-E-N Report. And that's how you can reach the program. One word, Graylian Report. But first, I do want to read this story, and then we'll take people's calls and commentary. An internal U.S. Department of Homeland Security document indicates that a controversial program designed to predict whether a person will commit a crime is already being tested on some members of the public voluntarily, CNET has learned. This was reported by Declan McCullough earlier this week, who handles the privacy portion of the website titled Privacy Inc. If this sounds a bit like the Tom Cruise movie called Minority Report or the CBS drama Person of Interest, it is. But where Minority Report author Philip K. Dick enlisted psychics to predict crimes, the Department of Homeland Security is betting on algorithms. It's building a prototype screening facility that it hopes will use factors such as ethnicity, gender, breathing, and heart rate to detect cues indicative of malintent. Hold on. It hopes it will use factors such as ethnicity, gender, breathing, and heart rate. Ethnicity and gender. I'm certain that there's no potential for profiling at all whatsoever.
Yeah, I started to say, that's not very PC, is it?
Yeah, really. And this is, of course, you know, that white right there, I don't think that the actual terms ethnicity, gender, breathing, and heart rate were taken directly from any documentation provided by the DHS, but this is all paraphrasing. We'll get to that in a moment, exactly where this information came from. It was obtained just earlier this week. The latest developments which reveal efforts to collect, process, or retain information on members of the public came to light through an internal Department of Homeland Security document obtained under open government laws by the Electronic Privacy Information Center. DHS calls its pre-crime system Future Attribute Screening Technology, or FAST for short. If it were deployed against the public, it would be very problematic, says Ginger McCall, Open Government Counsel at EPIC, a nonprofit group in Washington, D.C. It's unclear why the June 2010 DHS document specified that information is currently collected or retained on members of the public. as part of FAST, and a department representative declined to answer questions that CNET posted 2 days ago. Elsewhere in the document, FAST program manager Robert Middleton Jr. refers to a quote-unquote limited initial trial using DHS employees as test subjects. Middleton says that FAST, quote, sensors will not, or rather will non-intrusively collect video images, audio recordings, and get this, psychophysiological measurements from employees, with a subgroup of employees singled out with their permission for more rigorous evaluation. But no, think about this for just a minute. Now, they will collect this information initially from people with their knowledge of it being collected about them. But when it's eventually implemented to gather information from, air quotes here, folks, the public, you think people are going to know about this? Hi, this is James from the Department of Homeland Security, and you're being called to be notified that you have been screened as a potential committer of crimes in the near future, and therefore we will be monitoring your every activity over the next coming several days via video and photographs and other sensory monitoring equipment that will be hidden throughout places that you frequent in your daily life. With all due respect, the Department of Homeland Security appreciates your cooperation in this matter and thanks you in advance for, well, you know, anyway. I mean, that's literally what it's getting down to here with this. Elsewhere in the document, let's see here, I already read that part. Let's see, I was trying to get to the goods down here. Peter Bugard, the deputy press secretary for the Department of Homeland Security, provided a statement to CNET that said, quote, the department's science and technology directorate has conducted preliminary research in operational settings to determine the feasibility of using non-invasive physiological and behavioral sensor technology and observational techniques to detect signs of stress, which are often associated with intent to do harm. The FAST program is only in the preliminary stages of research, and there are no plans for acquiring or deploying this type of technology at this time. FAST is designed to track and monitor, among other inputs, body movements, voice pitch changes, alterations in the rhythm and intonation of speech, eye movements, body heat changes, and breathing patterns. Occupation and age are also considered. A government source recently told CNET that blink rate and pupil variation are measured too. You remember in the film Minority Report when Tom Cruise's character goes up and there's a retinal scan. I mean, we're already seeing retinal scanners actually being used today already for various different things. And then, of course, they're the highly controversial full-body scanners being used at airports and things. But they're talking about this sort of thing also being used to detect potential targets for those who might be intending to commit a crime. A field test of FAST has been conducted in at least one undisclosed location in the Northeast. It is not an airport, but it is a large venue that is a suitable substitute for an operational setting, the DHS spokesman John Verico told Nature.com in May. Although DHS has publicly suggested that FAST could be used at airport checkpoints, the Transportation Security Administration is part of the department, after all, the government appears to have grander ambitions. Oh, grander ambitions. Okay. One internal DHS document, also obtained by EPIC through the Freedom of Information Act, says a mobile version of FAST could be used at security checkpoints such as border crossings or at large public events, such as sporting events or conventions. Sporting events or conventions. So if you walk into a ball game, you're going to see the Raiders play, you might have to go through retinal scanners and all these different things that measure your heartbeat. Now, granted, they say it's going to be non-invasive, but we see also how the TSA has implemented its search procedures for people at airports. I mean, I could be wrong, but I also think that I'm probably well-equipped in terms of being able to imagine how this could go. Oh, goodness. It also says the next field trial of FAST will involve members of the public who have had food service experience. What? Who have food service experience? Have you ever worked a food service job? That's what I want you to call in with. 828-398-4886. Because I'd be willing to wager that probably more than half of the listenership of this program at some point in their lives, in their youth perhaps, worked in some area that involved food service.
I've had 4 food service jobs. Thanks for turning my mic up.
Yeah, you were clicking your keyboard really loud, so Matt had to cut you down. What were you saying, Chris? I couldn't hear you there.
I've had 4 food service jobs.
Buddy, I need to have you step through the scanner over here real quick before we can allow you to continue producing the program.
No, I mean, do you have gloves? You can...
No.
I don't need a scanner.
No, it's non-invasive. I don't want to actually touch you.
Can it be invasive?
I guess if you wanted it to be invasive, yeah, we could make it invasive. So you worked four food service jobs?
Yeah.
What about this? Have you been paid to work one day at a VIP event at any point in your life? I have.
No, I haven't.
Not paid, I don't think.
You haven't been paid to work one day at a VIP event, Matt?
Nah. I think maybe volunteered, but not paid.
Okay, so well, yeah, what if people who people, because that's another one of the criteria they list here. They said it's also looking for members of the public who have had food service experience and are paid to work at a one-day VIP event. But if you weren't paid to work at a VIP event, if you were just, I think you're okay. Most of the document is redacted, of course, which means that they basically, you know, they razored out all the important stuff, you know, with a black magic marker. But each person is apparently told to act normally or do something demonstrating malintent, such as being told to smuggle a recording device into that VIP event. The trick, then, is to see if FAST can detect which is which. Okay, in other words, what they're going to do is this is a trial. They're going to have people knowingly try and get into these events and do this sort of thing and see if the FAST system works. I'm sure it's going to work 100% of the time, and it's going to be able to reliably profile individuals and tell which ones of them are criminals or who intended to be criminals, even if they haven't actually acted and been a criminal. But, you know, I mean, that is the problem, is that, you know, you don't know a criminal until that person has broken the law, right? It gets tricky. Oh, I know it does. You know, we're up on another break right now. What are your thoughts about this? Do you think, is this a complete and total invasion of people's privacy? Or if the NSA were able to accurately determine whether or not they were dealing with, well, future criminals, would that be more helpful than harmful? I think you know how I feel about it. I'd like to hear your thoughts. 828-398-4886 or Graylin Report on Skype. We'll talk more about this and a few other things, including evil aliens, when we come back here on the Graylin Report. I'm Micah Hanks. You've locked in for your home of truth, freedom, justice, and the esoteric way. It is the Graylin Report. We'll be back right after this.
Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylin Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylin Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Welcome back to the program. I'm Micah Hanks, and you've locked in. It is the Graylin Report. We'll try and go right on to the phone, since I think we will be hopefully getting some commentary from folks about this. I hope you're as terrified out there in the listening audience as I am by this whole pre-crime thing. Joining us now, I believe we have Lulu on the line. Lulu, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I was wanting to call in and talk a little bit about something that happened to me. I guess this was 4 or 5 years ago. I used to have a little blog where I talked about UFOs, and I would go into my many theories about UFOs and aliens and abductions and things like that, and I never really checked, like, my blog stats out, so I never really checked to see who was coming mm-hmm. to the blog. But one day, just out of the blue, I decided to check and see who was you know, coming to the blog, if anyone was. And I noticed somebody had been coming from Washington, D.C.
Oh.
So, yeah, so I opened it up, and literally, it was coming from the Federal Aviation Commission from Washington, D.C.
I wonder what they wanted. Did you ever find out?
No, I just kind of, it creeped me out. I was really paranoid back then. I was super, super paranoid. I was doing a lot of hallucinogens at that time. So I just stopped writing about it altogether. And I thought, oh my gosh, the Federal Aviation Commission's monitoring me. I'm going to end up like, you know, like Philip Schneider or William Cooper or something.
William Cooper, so yeah.
Yeah. So I just stopped writing about it. I got really scared.
You know, I tell you, I've had that very same thing happen. Let me tell you a real quick story about my own experience with that. Because, you know, as you know, right now we've been experiencing some some website issues with a particular blog associated with this program as well. But, and by the way, it's very nice to talk to you, Lulu, because I know that you is one of our regular listeners. You follow the program on a weekly basis. That's how we happen to know your name, and you are also calling in through Skype, and so we're able to actually see your name when we're screening phone calls. Well, that's just it. We don't screen phone calls, so we don't know anybody's name. But we do happen to know your name, so thank you for calling into the program. I had a situation occur one time where I had been working in radio for Clear Channel Communications, and that's how I know Matt Matan, who, of course, you know, paid us some wonderful compliments today, earlier today. And it was funny because I'd begun one of the two sister websites to this program, Politomatic.com. Within a few days of starting that website, it wasn't a government organization that had been monitoring what I was doing, but Clear Channel Corporate in San Antonio, Texas, sure enough, had been going to the website. They wanted to see what their employees were putting out there. I thought that was pretty revealing. Now, the Graylian Report, on the other hand, I mean, you can monitor those statistics, you know, through, I think there's a number of different kinds of programs, StatPress and things, different widgets that will allow you to monitor who's coming to your website and from where. I've talked with a lot of people in the paranormal blogging community who say that, indeed, you know, you do this stuff enough and you'll start seeing little hits from government servers and things like that. And I think that people do generally like to keep an eye out for what people are doing and what they're involved in, especially when it comes to rather clandestine subject matter like we like to talk about on this program.
Yeah, it really creeped me out. And right before I leave, I have one more thing that I want to ask you.
Absolutely.
Guys. Have you heard about the Russian, or I guess the Siberian expedition to go find Yeti?
You know, I heard there was a development with that today. They are claiming now that they have proof that there is a Yeti and that it exists,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about. I just read that they're saying that they found his footprints and his bed and markers where he marks his territory. They're saying that they're 95% certain that the Yeti exists in Siberia.
I have one question. They say they found his bed. Is it a Sleep Number bed?
I don't know. If he has any kind of smarts about him, then it's got to be a Sleep Number bed.
Yeah, we'd hope so.
No, I think it's an air mattress.
Hold on, hold on.
Kind of like Chris's.
Hold on, we have dissent among our ranks. Okay, Chris, what is it? It's not a Sleep Number?
Clearly, the Yeti is a savvy consumer and uses only Tempur-Pedic.
Maybe you're right. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
It's okay, I use an air mattress.
No, hold on, but now I wanted to hear what Matt had to say, too. Now, Matt, you don't think it was Tempur-Pedic?
No, I think it's an air mattress like what Chris sleeps on.
Yeah, because Chris sleeps in Studio B every week. Oh, poor guy. Lulu, thank you so
God
much for
knows
calling
he's
in.
Not in here.
Thank you.
All right, hope to hear from you again soon. Take care, dear. Yeah, so maybe there is, I don't know, have they discovered the Yeti? You know, I saw that story earlier. I think Rick Stokes, our friend at The Anomalist, actually linked that. Maybe we will just have to pull that up and take a look for ourselves and touch on that. But getting back a little bit to this pre-crime, and actually what Lulu called in about did have to do with what we were discussing, you know, whether or not government groups are monitoring certain people and watching them. You know, I have a friend also who has a fantastic radio program. We should get him on this program. I had him on the Micah Hanks Show back in the day. Greg Bishop. Greg Bishop's a good friend, and of course, you know, he's the author of Project Beta, and he hosts the Radio Misterioso radio program out of the Los Angeles area. But Greg is really the guy when it comes to not just UFOs, but also some of these rather esoteric governmental actions and things like that. And he said that he went through a period, he blogged about this at the UFO Mystic website, where he said that, you know, I went through a period where I felt like like, maybe I was just, you know, like, I don't know, that people were watching me. How did he describe it? Kind of like what Lulu said. He said, I got really paranoid there for a little while. it really began to get to a point for me where I was uncomfortable, you know, going about my daily business. He said I felt like my mail was being opened, and it was clearly the case that my mail had in many instances been tampered with, and so obviously so that he began to feel that maybe, I think in fact it was specifically mail that was coming back and forth between he and another researcher at the time, but he said that it was so obvious that the mail had been tampered with that I doubt that the mail had just had been opened and searched through. He said, I think that the only explanation was that it had been intentionally manhandled and mangled and opened and then taped back up to make it evident to me that someone was actually looking through my mail. It was an intimidation measure. And he said that every time he heard a bump, you know, on the floor above him, you know, he would stop moving and try and see what was going on. What are we dealing with here? Oh, no. And it became truly a very strange situation for him where he basically had to either choose to be paranoid all the time about these things that were going on or say, you know, I've got to live my life. I can't live in fear. You know, my life is what it is. I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not breaking any laws. And if people want to watch me, well, they can watch me, but I'm not going to let it control my life. Had another fellow who contacted me recently and told me about his brother who literally, I think, received some sort of a notification, albeit not directly from the Department of Homeland Security or one of these similar organizations, but found out that he had been monitored. And he contacted them directly and said, you know, I don't mind that you monitor me. I realize what you're doing and your reason for doing it. And I have nothing to hide. And therefore, you know, you can monitor me all you want. That's kind of how I feel, too. I mean, you know, I'm interested in a lot of different subjects, but I'm certainly not involved in anything that I feel is, A, of any danger to anyone, and B, something that, you know, I wouldn't feel comfortable with the government knowing about. You know, I don't like the idea of people, you know, peering into our lives and, you know, knowing every aspect of our private lives. But by the same token, I'm not a person, personally, Micah A. Hanks, that feels like he has anything to hide. And, you know, I think also the best place, if you're going to hide something, is put it out in the open, you know. If you're uncomfortable with the idea of UFOs and stuff, sometimes I think it's better to talk about that sort of thing. Put it out there in the open, you know, because that desensitizes it. You know, when it's clandestine and secret, that's when it's kind of, well, you know, a problem area. I noticed, and this is kind of strange, and we've been having these website problems recently, and now I'm trying to get Patrick Weege's Anomalist site to load, and it won't load. I can't get the... It keeps saying that the server isn't found. Other websites load with no problem whatsoever, but the Anomalist is not coming up, so... You know, we've had some problems over the last few days. Let's hope that this same situation hasn't hit the anomalist.com just as well.
Let's hope it's not an anonymous problem.
I hope it's not also, because you know what? You know, can we get into the cone of silence for a second, guys? Is that cool? Can we get in the cone of silence? Okay, cone of silence. 3, 2, 1. All right, guys. I don't, can we talk about that on the program?
I mean, it's a pretty iffy subject, but
keep your voice down.
You know, I think they're ready to hear it.
Who?
Our listeners. I don't, but what if they're anonymous?
Who's anonymous?
The listeners.
Them?
Yes. It's the internet. We're all anonymous.
We're all, well, wait a minute, are you anonymous?
Names.
You're not anonymous.
They're your names.
No, I'm Sam Lane.
What? You're not? Okay. All right, let's go back. Okay. All right, 3, 2, 1. All right, well, you know, I don't know, We had to have a little private chat. You weren't able to hear what we were saying, but there's been a lot of activity recently with regard to this Wall Street thing. The group known as, or the lack thereof, known as Anonymous, had recently said that they would take down the New York Stock Exchange. That actually was supposed to happen on Monday, and it, at least to some extent, there was maybe some activity, which of course coincided with Columbus Day and banks being closed and things like that. But, which I always thought was kind of strange because, you know, if they were going to take anything down through such potential online activity, why would they wait until a day when banks are closed to try and crash those servers or whatever? So, but anyway, but Anonymous, the group, had put up a notification saying that they were going to do that. And you know, this organization, which in some ways, you know, I certainly support a lot of the things that they have involved themselves in. you know, for instance, you know, they've involved. Well, they kind of keep away from political activities and things like that. But they've certainly gone after the Church of Scientology and some of these organizations and things like that. And I've read some really fascinating articles in various magazines that tell about the exploits of Anonymous. I think they've actually been talked or touched on in Wired magazine and in some of these. Maxim magazine, I think, was another magazine that did a spread on West, but poor choice of words for Maxim magazine talking about. Never mind. But anyway, they did a feature on the Anonymous enigma and, you know, people that come from the corners of the web to come together and target different groups that they think are acting, you know, out of line. And with regard to the Wall Street thing, they felt that this was much the same case, and that they were going to basically use some of their infamous, spamming techniques to take down the New York Stock Exchange. And I mentioned that on, I actually wrote an article for Mysterious Universe recently that mentioned that. Mysterious Universe, by the way, being our friends Ben and Aaron down in Australia, mysteriousuniverse.org. If you're not aware of it already, I write for Mysterious Universe, and they're good friends of ours. In fact, I might just have to go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. Benjamin Grundy, you got to keep in mind, it's 9:38 p.m. Eastern time right now where we are, and it's morning over there in Australia, but I just got an email from Benjamin Grundy, our good friend down there, who's the man with the plan behind Mysterious Universe. We may have found a way to solve our hosting problems, and indeed, I'm 99.997 with a line over it percent sure that we have, and I can thank entirely Benjamin Grundy for that. So hopefully folks will be able to download this podcast very soon, and we thank you, our good friends, our brothers down under at Mysterious Universe, for that. I'll have a new article for them very soon. I owe them several now without pay, but anyway. But after writing about Anonymous the other day, you know, when the website went down, and I start digging into the access code, and I start seeing that a single IP address in a number of instances was to blame for a multitude of hits to the most recent edition of the Graylian Report website, which constituted bandwidth issues, and thus my serving providers took us down as a result. You know, the thought crossed my mind, maybe not Anonymous, you know, because I don't think I've ever said anything that would piss them off, but I certainly did wonder if somebody hadn't, you know, if there wasn't some irate, you know, listener or someone I'd written about, you know, who had gotten a bunch of people together and they literally tried to crash the Graylian Report. Who the hell would want to crash the Graylian Report? I thought we were the good guys, but, and I don't think anybody really did try and crash the Graylian Report, but, you know, hey, the thought crossed my mind, you know. And coming back to what I was talking about with regard to Greg Bishop, you know, and what Lulu called in to talk about, it's natural. When you have these kinds of things happen for yourself, it's very natural to feel like you're being watched or you're being persecuted. You're the object of someone else's hatred and attempts to silence you. I think it's very natural to feel that way. We probably all, especially if you're interested in the strange and unusual and you've actually gone about researching it actively at any point, like Lulu or myself or these two goons here in the studio with me, I think it's natural that you'll begin to feel that way. And then I think there are some people out there who quite clearly have actually been monitored, have actually been watched. You know, she mentioned when she called in Bill Cooper. Bill Cooper, of course, was, in addition to someone who talked about UFO conspiracies and things of that nature, he also had a shortwave radio program, Hour of the Time, in which he talked about a lot of, you know, constitutionalist and, you know, patriot-themed issues. And, yeah, Bill Cooper was indeed someone who I think probably government organizations chose to keep an eye on. A lot of people say that his death was more than coincidental. I know he'd been out at his home, and basically there'd been a warrant for his arrest. Cooper was distracted, or rather, police officers had parked outside of his property and blasted loud music to give the impression that there were young teenagers out there, you know, on his property. And so Cooper, armed with a weapon, I mean, if I wake up in the middle of the night and there's what I perceive as a bunch of kids parked at the end of my driveway blasting loud music in the middle of the night, doing God knows what at 1 o'clock in the morning, I might, if I owned a handgun, I would probably carry that down and investigate myself. That or call the police. But Bill Cooper wasn't on very good terms with the police at the time in his locale, and so, of course, there he goes, as I understand it, armed and heads down. And the attempt was to try and lure him off of his property, at which time the police would serve him, you know, papers or, you know, issue the arrest, as it were. And it ended up resulting in a shootout where I think there was a police officer or two that were injured. I think one at least was killed, and Bill Cooper, of course, was shot dead. Many people have said that it wasn't just a shootout that resulted from confusion involving that police operation and that attempt to lure Cooper down so that he could be arrested. A lot of people think that the intention all along had been to go up there and assassinate Cooper. He was a political dissident. He was not someone who was exactly favorable, and his political views and things that he was expressing on his shortwave radio program were certainly not the kind that people liked. He had been featured on Alex Jones's program at least once or twice, but you know, Alex, while being cordial to Mr. Cooper, Cooper didn't seem to like Alex Jones very much and began to badmouth him, and there was a very well publicized feud that went on between the two, and you know, where Cooper essentially said that Alex Jones was a sensationalist. I don't know where he got off saying that sort of thing about Alex Jones. That's just, you know,
that's totally unfounded.
Yeah, really. I mean, come on, Alex Jones a sensationalist? No. And then Alex Jones, who I think really did do everything he could to be, you know, friendly and fair to Bill Cooper. I think that, oh my God, Chris Hayes has left the building.
What? Where are you going?
Yeah, I think we just offended the producer, Matt. But anyway,
he is a big Alex Jones fan.
He is a huge Alex Jones fan. We should never have said anything. I knew it. Oh boy.
You know.
Are you going to answer the phones for me now?
Yeah, I guess I'll take over for a minute.
Yeah. Help me out here, Matt, because this is... Speaking of phones, if you'd like to call in with your thoughts, and we don't necessarily have to just talk about the government thing. I did want to put that story about the Homeland Security issue out there. You can call in 828-398-4886, or you can reach us via Skype at Graylien Report. That's G-R-A-L-I-E-N Report. There's another way that you can reach us as well. You're also more than welcome just to email us. info@graylienreport.com will come through to us. You can do that. And we're also receiving Skype messages from people. In fact, Mike Cleland writes that I'm deeply impressed with your field correspondent, Anya Briggs. She was very professional. Mike, we share that sentiment entirely, and certainly hope to have her back on the program. She is although she refers to herself as a partial pundit, I think she's more than that, and she's a very talented individual all around. So that said, what was it we were going to touch on in addition to this pre-crime thing? Actually, you know, we're coming up on a break. Let's go ahead and go to break. And when we come back, I want to touch on this story that New York Times discussed this week. I'm kind of tired of this particular subject, just to be honest. And that's why we're going to touch on it on the program, because I think it's absolutely ridiculous that this is still something that people consider you know, worthy of an op-ed, especially in the New York Times. Are aliens nice or not, or would they be if they came to Earth? Hell no, they wouldn't be. I don't know, really, but you know what? I think that it's probably, for the most part, a non-issue. When we come back after this break, I'll delve into exactly why I think that is. And for the most part, the alien situation, as we perceive it, probably, well, is not exactly what it seems, and certainly not with the mainstream media. When they do decide to grace that subject with their hallowed presence, it's not what they make it out to be. I'm Micah Hanks, not the mainstream. We're the Graylien Report. We'll be back right after this.
from the high mountains of Appalachia. It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Yes, we're your light in the darkness, and when you feel like all you have left is your sanity, you've even lost your soul, well, it's probably hanging out down here in the bunker with us every Tuesday night from 8 to 11 p.m. It is the Graylian Report, your weekly hub for the strange, the unusual, all the news that's fit to, well, if it doesn't go in the mainstream media, you'll at least see it at www.graylianreport.com, one website we are certainly glad to have back up and running. I hope that people are indeed able to hear us well enough right now because, you know, in addition to all the other crap that we're always experiencing here on the program, it seems that there's also some internet server issues, and our producer was attempting to try and take care of some of that for us during the break, but we are apparently we're still online. That's always a good thing. We certainly pay plenty to try and keep this operation on the air, don't we?
The internet goblins just hate my computer.
So it's been fire imps in the past, or fire monkeys, and now we are being afflicted by internet goblins.
So you're inept because you couldn't fix the problem?
I don't think he's inept, but I think that the goblins are wiry little bastards. You know, they're difficult to deal with.
That's true.
And, Matt, if you ever call me inept again, we're going to have words.
Radio voices, gentlemen. I can't hear you.
If you ever call me inept again, we're going to have words.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, goodness gracious. you know, okay, guys. So, but, you know, be nice to one another because we can't expect aliens to do the same. No, it's true, really. The New York Times, they thought that this was fit to print, and therefore they did, and therefore they went with this. In the Opinionator, exclusive online commentary from the Times. Will the aliens be nice? Gary Gutting asks. Don't bet on it. Gary Gutting is a professor of philosophy at the University of Notre Dame, and he apparently and his staff try to apply critical thinking to information events that have appeared in the news. Well, this is one such. It has been something that we've been seeing a good bit in the news recently, whether or not if aliens came to Earth, they would be friendly. Stephen Hawking has said, you know, many times,
do not advertise the fact that we have life on planet Earth, because aliens may not be very friendly to human life on here on planet Earth.
Not cool, Micah.
That was my Stephen Hawking. You know, I'm known for my impersonations of people. What was not cool about me being Stephen Hawking? What?
Your chair's not half as cool.
Matt, you're going to have a cleanup here in just a second, I think.
Because he's going to start shooting blood from his eyes.
When aliens come to planet Earth, they will not be nice to people. Therefore, we must be very...
Oh, Lord. Come on. You can thank Robin Williams. He's the one that I saw doing that.
Would you like to come with me on a picnic, Chris Hayes? We will go down to the river, and we will leave and eat sandwiches and drink grass for the soul of us together one for another.
If I didn't know the context, I would not have known you said sandwiches.
Sandwiches.
Oh, Lord. Anyway, Stephen Hawking, though, the reason I bring up Stephen Hawking is because he said that, you know, if aliens visit Earth, we will not do well, and I cannot know if they are good or not. So we wouldn't know if they were good or evil, basically. And he, paraphrasing what he said, I think the actual quote, not in Hawking speak, was that essentially if indeed we were visited, we couldn't rely on these beings. What was it here? I think the analogy he used was that when the United States, well, it wasn't the United States, when the Americas were first visited by European settlers, it didn't work out very well for people in what is now America. You know, it didn't work out for the Native Americans very well. And if we were to assume that someone was going to come and visit planet Earth, people looking for who knows what, a new home to colonize, you know, a new land to tap the riches of, well, would we be treated very much like the natives were when Europeans came and landed on American soil?
Are they going to give us space smallpox?
You never know. That's one factor. You know, maybe there would be, interplanetary diseases and things like that that could be brought to Earth. Another factor would be that, indeed, they would perceive us as savages, much like, you know, European settlers began to perceive Native Americans. And being the lesser advanced society that we are, if indeed aliens from outer space with a highly, much more sophisticated, you know, mode of transportation and God knows what other kinds of technology they would have, available to them as well in the event that they visited Earth, we indeed might be treated much the same. And so bottom line is that Stephen Hawking said, we don't need to try and advertise using SETI programs, search for extraterrestrial intelligence and the like. SETI's one thing. SETI's gathering signals, but the idea of writing back, so to speak, METI, active SETI, this is another expression for this. We need to be very careful when it involves that sort of thing. So that's Stephen Hawking's approach to this, and this is basically where this has been in the news, and this brings us back to Gary Gutting's discussion of timely news-oriented events, and the probability that aliens would not be very nice if they came to Earth. He says, a recent study by researchers at Penn State and NASA provides a useful outline of the various ways that encounters with ETI, extraterrestrial intelligence, could be beneficial, neutral, or harmful to us. The study faces up to the most chilling possibilities. ETI might eat us, enslave us, attack us, inadvertently infect us with horrible diseases, or just decide to eliminate us for the greater good of the universe. Regarding this last point, the report is especially concerned that ETI might be, at least metaphorically, green, and see us as a threat to the universe's ecology. You may remember, listeners of this program, that we've actually featured this program, this very story on the show in the past.
And I actually wanted to interject something here and talk about, not just the idea that if extraterrestrials exist, if they come to Earth and let's not even say they're malicious. Let's not say they are dangerous or violent in any way. But we always perceive extraterrestrials as being very humanoid, breathing air.
Oh, yeah.
Things like this. What if, this is, of course, gross speculation, but what if an alien came down, wanted to be friendly, took in air, exhaled, cyanide gas?
Right, exactly. Like, this is a friendship display on Zeta 2 Reticuli. and therefore, we respond to that as, oh my God, they're being hostile. There are so many different factors that could be involved in this kind of thing.
You have to take everyone into account.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think, first of all, too, the other thing that drives me nuts about this sort of speculation, and I see where they're kind of going with this. Let me just real quickly state something else that Gutting points out here. He says the report, which again we've touched on this program, draws no conclusions about the wisdom of pursuing SETI, though it does urge the need to develop quantitative measures of possible harms and benefits. Its final sentence seems content with the idea that we will, quote, continue the search for extraterrestrials into the future. Especially after reading the report, I am not so content. What is likely to happen if we make contact with extraterrestrial intelligence? Given the size of astronomical distances and assuming the speed of light is the maximum possible velocity, the most likely outcome is not real contact, but merely an exchange of messages, perhaps at very long intervals. Little chance of harm there. But there's still non-zero probability of real contact. Since we have no way of predicting with any certainty the outcome of such contact, it might seem that we have no reason to assume a bad rather than good result. From this, we might conclude that there is no objection to pursuing SETI, if only to satisfy our own curiosity. But we do know this. For the foreseeable future, contact with extraterrestrials would have to result from their coming here, which would, in all likelihood, mean that they far surpassed us technologically. They would be able to enslave us. They would be able to hunt us as prey. They would be able to torture us as objects of scientific experiments, or even exterminate us and leave no trace of our civilization. They would, in other words, be able to treat us as we treat animals, or as our technologically more advanced societies have often treated less advanced ones. But I'll tell you this. I'm not one to think that if indeed advanced travel through space were to occur, that it would occur on the basis of there being physical beings coming to planet Earth. I wonder sometimes about different modes of contact. I've talked about this on the program before, so I don't want to be redundant, but again, I'll just mention, look at the end of 2001. It's quite apparent that, the astronaut there on the manned mission to Jupiter is essentially having some sort of a non-physical encounter with some sort of non-physical intelligence. And the way I interpreted the film, there are so many different interpretations. One individual shared a brilliant interpretation with me recently that involved, you know, the film basically constituting the memories of a basically what is called a watcher hovering around Earth, which I think is more in keeping with Arthur Clarke's interpretation of the film. I had to watch the film a few times when I was younger before I came to any serious conclusions about what was actually happening. And my initial conclusion was that what had happened was that, you know, of course, the, you know, Major Tom, or I don't think his name is Major Tom, actually, but I'm quoting, you know, from the Space Oddity song by Ziggy Stardust, a.k.a. David Bowie.
This is ground control to Major Tom.
Thank you, Matt Oakley. Indeed, yes. And so he's traveling along, and he reaches Jupiter. He kind of wakes up in this. He comes out of the space pod and he's in this weird little room. You know, it's
he's
like a
floating in a most peculiar way.
It's yeah, but it's an odd circumstance. It really is. And then he dies. The monolith's at the end of the bed and everything. And I always interpreted that he had passed away, and only after dying was he able to basically harness non-physical extraterrestrial intelligence, and then he was reborn as the Star Child and sent back to Earth. You know, there are a lot of different interpretations, I guess, of 2001, A Space Odyssey, but what was beautiful about that, to me, was, of course, you know, humankind having a non-physical interaction with some sort of intelligence, something that might even transcend, well, physical life and existence as we know it. That's something that I don't think very many of these people take into consideration. Everyone is so married to the idea of there being physical extraterrestrials. Well, there are physical UFOs flying around out there, aren't there? Yeah. What are those? Obviously, there are aliens. What if the UFOs were piloted by somebody else? Different Easter basket to dig into altogether. We'll come back to that right after this. I'm Micah Hanks. This is The Graylian Report. Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report here. I just wanted to take a minute, well, really just 30 seconds, to tell you a little about a wonderful project I'm privileged to be a part of these days. It's called Intrepid Magazine. Intrepid is an eclectic melting pot of a variety of different areas of interest, ranging from politics and fringe science to mysteries of the unexplained. You'll hear from authors like Nick Redfern, April Slaughter, Marie D. Jones, and Larry Flaxman, editor and publisher Scotty Roberts, and, of course, yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Period. Subscribe today. Visit www.intrepidmag.com.
Hey guys, Jamie Havoc in here for UFO Mag. Do you want to receive the best writing there is in ufology, the best writers, editors, and flat out the best magazine that ufology can offer? If so, I highly recommend UFO Magazine. You can check it out at ufomag.com. And if you mention that you heard this on radio, you can get six issues for $19.95.
It's really fast, too. I knew I was going to go. It was just a matter of when I was going to go.
Exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is The Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
Unbelievable in radio speak, or radio time, even though I don't think that time actually exists, how quickly it seems to go by every week when we're doing this program with you. I'm so glad that our good friends at Mysterious Universe, Ben and Aaron, have you know, already been in contact with us to help us figure out our hosting problem. That's the wonderful thing about working with people in this business. There's so many people who are willing to help. And I tell you, when it comes to the paranormal, especially, the strange and the unusual, I see more of that in this area of interest than probably just about any place else. So, to our friends in Australia, Ben and Aaron, we thank you. And also to another friend, a friend of mine from somewhere abroad, the infamous Red Pill Junkie, who I understand has been chatting it up with some of our production staff over the last little bit. We send you Salutations, amigo. Without further ado, we're welcoming everyone else here back to the program for hour three of your weekly edition of the Grayling Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio, as always, by the fantastic and irreplaceable production engineering staff, Mr. Chris Hayes and Matt Oakley. My two favorite guys. The only people I could probably tolerate having in this studio with me week after week because they do such a good job.
What about Alex Jones?
Alex Jones does a good job also. Alex, wait a minute. Alex isn't in the studio. Would you just do the show? Do your show. Don't make me scream like Alex Jones.
Chris, do it.
Oh, let me get his volume level down since I have to ride his volume all the time.
What?
You.
Me what?
Hmm.
We're riding your volume.
Matt?
How do
Matt,
you feel about that?
Is that like riding the whip?
Yeah.
It's like riding the snake. Ride the snake.
Oh, did you want me to scream?
No. Didn't want you to scream.
I can.
I know. We don't need that. Am I friends with Alex Jones on Facebook?
You know what? I'll scream randomly before that hour's over. It's all right.
Yeah. I'm sure you will. I'm sure you'll work one in there. So, anyway, that said, welcome back to the program. You know, we were talking last hour a bit about, aliens and whether or not they would be wicked, evil, bad guys. Again, I think thinking in terms entirely physical terms, in terms of alien... Well, I'm being redundant again, aren't I? In terms of alien intervention or alien interaction with humanity, kind of a simplistic attempt at really dealing with the entire situation, in my opinion. I don't know that anything we would consider alien, and I use that term rather than extraterrestrial for the simple reason that I don't know that whatever intelligence that might make contact with humankind on those kinds of, terms would be physical as we know it. I'm pretty skeptical about that idea.
And that's, exactly what I had said last, right before the break, and Chris and I were actually talking about during this recent break. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I used an extreme example there, exhaling like cyanide gas or something.
Well, I think it's a good example, though. I mean, because that's something that would be directly considered, by a human. If an alien came up to you and breathed cyanide gas all over you, you would interpret that immediately as an attack against your person. If on another planet, that had been intended as a greeting, of course, that's going to, cause a problem for them and for you.
But at the same time, you have to use, I think, that logic into all factors of alien life. Like, what if these things, again, don't even exist on our wavelength? What if they, exist on a different spectrum? We're not even able to perceive them.
Yes, exactly. And in which case we are right now possibly surrounded by interdimensional or extraterrestrial, if you want to use that term, intelligences, and we aren't even aware of their existence, which is interesting to me because of, and this is something that we're very familiar with here in the studio, Rick Strassman's research. I own both the books, DMT, The Spirit Molecule, and Inner Paths to Outer Space. They're both really, really, really remarkable books that talk about, the possibility that some people, have claimed to have had encounters with what they consider sentient intelligence from other worlds, while under the influence of certain hallucinogenic drugs, and I get into that in Magic Mysticism of the Molecule also.
But again, we're still, even when you have these mystical experiences, which definitely cannot be discounted or discredited off of me saying this, mm-hmm. There's definitely some validity to some of their statements. However, think about what these people see. And we've even talked about it on the show before, mantis people.
Yeah.
Even the most drastic depictions of extraterrestrials that we have in people's, trips or dreams or, even science fiction still remain, like I said to Chris, Ridley Scott's Alien. Mm-hmm. Or H.R. Giger's Alien, mm-hmm. humanoid, and still holds a lot of resemblance to a lot of predators that we find on Earth.
Oh, of course. As far as we try and get with the idea of a quote-unquote alien, people are pretty, close-minded.
It's always, humanoid, reptilian, insectoid. It's still things we know here. Mm-hmm. And the chances are, if you look at it logically and statistically, or probability-wise, that's probably not the case.
It's funny. I correspond with a brilliant gentleman who recently, I wrote an article from mysteriousuniverse.org that talked about something he posted on one of his blogs. He's a New York-based philosopher and writer, science writer. Maxim Kammerer is his name. And he had sent me an email correspondence in which he basically said that he felt that if you took most of the UFO data available today and fed them into a computer, you know, that monitored statistics and algorithms, essentially what you just said, Matt, that it would probably indicate something more along the lines of a non-physical, intelligence of sorts, as opposed to the idea of there being an alien presence, at least with regard to explaining UFO phenomena. I thought that was pretty interesting, and it's funny that you bring that up as well here on the program. You know, Chris, I got a quick question for you. You know, I know that you, with your background on things theologically and whatnot, you know, are not a proponent of the idea of angels and demons and things along those lines, which might make for an interesting bridge into a discussion that Matt wanted to bring to the table this hour. But I do want to ask you, do you think that rules out the possibility of non-physical contact with again, I want to use this term kind of in air quotes here, alien contact, not extraterrestrial physical alien beings, but, you know, non-human intelligences, maybe from other dimensions. Do you think that it's possible to have a contact or some brand of communication with that kind of an intelligence on a non-physical level in an ethereal way via an altered state of consciousness or something like that? And if that's the case, do you think that could actually even be one in the same with religious and cultural interpretations of angels, demons, and the like?
Well, in regards to your first question, I'm going to make myself a hypocrite and say, I don't even know how you worded it, what the proper answer would be. Yes, I think, you know, non-physical contact with extraterrestrial beings would be possible. That makes me a hypocrite because...
Well, how does it make you a hypocrite?
Well, because a lot of people would probably say, well, why are you so okay with aliens and not God and angels? And I think, possibly, you know, not to borrow from Giorgio or any of the folks at Ancient Aliens, but, you know, if there were alien contact, or there was alien contact, either physical or non-physical, back then, yeah, it could be misconstrued as, you know, again, back to the cultural references thing, you don't know what an alien is. You just see something come down from the sky talking to you, you know, making fire with its eyes or doing something really crazy, yeah, you're going to think it's a god. Or, mm-hmm. you know, like with the Native Americans, when the Spaniards first came to Mesoamerica, they thought they were gods because right. they had, you know, boomsticks and cross-country boats, like transoceanic boats.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think it's entirely possible, and I do think they were... Or could have been mistaken for gods, devils, demons, angels, all of that. But I want to reiterate, in no way think they're supernatural.
See, it's interesting. Where do you draw the distinction between what is quote-unquote supernatural and what is an intelligence that is not physical in the sense that we are physical, you know, stemming from some immaterial dimensional realm? That is capable of having a, you know, some sort of a, you know, conscious interaction with us.
Well, that would be all due to, you know, technological advances and the evolving of a species to the point where non-physical communication is possible versus a thing creating everything out of nothing.
Mm-hmm. I see. You know, and it's interesting because, again, that brings, you know, and I see where you were going with that last statement, you know, and it's not my intention to draw it into a religious conversation here, you know, because I think we're discussing non-physical intelligences. And that said, I'm going to dodge the religious implications of any of these statements altogether, and I'm going to say that, you know, in a post-singularity future, singularity is a term. It's funny because, you know, I wasn't really truly familiar with that expression, singularity. By the time we'd begun doing the program, a few times I had myself come on this show and talked about, you know, the idea that human-like beings, aliens, you know, on another planet might augment their bodies cybernetically with intent of making themselves more capable of withstanding the rigors of travel through deep space, and not just travel through space, but travel for long periods in space, which would eventually probably also lead itself to something along the lines of, you know, entirely cybernetic beings, which replaced basically every you know, aspect of their physicality with you know, engineered, constructed parts. This is probably something that would take place gradually over time, and then eventually this would literally result in people who were, and I say people again, you know, referring to not humans per se, but maybe, you know, in my original thought experiment, I was thinking aliens on another planet. After literally replicating themselves in a cybernetic way and replacing their physical bodies with a cybernetic, you know, shell of some sort, not only are they able to withstand the rigors of space travel, but they're able to do so for much longer periods, potentially maybe forever, for all I know. Maybe they've reached immortality. This is one kind of more scientific, or not scientific, but science fiction, I guess, approach to similar notions that exist already, which Ray Kurzweil and, you know, people like back in the 1990s, Werner Vinge, the science fiction writer, had been talking about this singularity where essentially the rate of growth of technology would begin to exceed human knowledge and artificial intelligence working alongside human knowledge, and of course even exceeding potentially, would cause humans to begin to merge with machines. And it's not so much what I'd thought about in terms of, you know, a conscious, basically retrofitting one's physical body with cybernetic parts for purposes of space travel and colonization of space and the like. But it is such that, you know, our technology becomes so advanced and so sophisticated, and we, by really what becomes a very natural process, we merge with the machines. This is why Ray Kurzweil has written books that deal with subjects that include, for instance, you know, I think one of the titles is The Age of Spiritual Machines, and of course, you know, the Singularity is Near, the latest book, and, you know, on my Facebook page, I'm standing in a bookstore holding a copy of The Singularity is Near. But, and I'm not what I would call, what the book calls, a singularitarian, per se. I am interested in the discussion of such things as the singularity and the like. And primarily my interest in that subject is not so much that, you know, I'm a science geek, but I think it is, it has more to do with the fact that if indeed, and this is coming back to my earlier, more primitive notion of how, you know, a singularity-like occurrence might happen for purposes of colonization of space elsewhere in another galaxy, and hence we have what are, you know, described often as these slightly androidial, robotic-like beings that come into people's homes and abduct them from their bedrooms at night. I was thinking, well, what if something like that happened right here on Earth? You know, and this is a theory that, again, you know, my colleague Dr. Maxim Kammerer has talked about at his blog. Of course, you know, I blogged about that at Mysterious Universe recently. That notion is that in a post-singularity future, a future where humans have already gone through a sort of singularity, what if they, future humans, merge with machines, merge with digital technology, merge with our computers, and the humans of the future are not the humans of today. They are a kind of human that can literally interact with space and time in a way that our physical bodies will not allow, and that they are literally able to control and manipulate aspects of time perceived as a constant throughout what we would perceive as history or even the future. In other words, it's something we would probably liken to being time travel. Occasionally, we might come into contact with future humans, which are augmenting portions of what we perceive as, you know, the present and what we would perceive as the past for future humans. And in the process of augmenting this and interacting with us in this chronological way, we perceive them as some highly advanced race of super beings. What if the entire UFO mystery actually hinged around future humans manipulating aspects of, well, their quote-unquote past? I say quote-unquote past because I think that if future humans indeed were able to operate in such a way, it would probably be such that time wouldn't really exist in the chronological sense for them as it does for us, a progression through, well, you know, past, present, and future. time would probably have more of a spatial kind of existence from their perception, their post-singularity perception, their digitized consciousness, and therefore they could interact with it and even manipulate it in ways that, well, might seem, well, pretty magical to you and I. What if that's what lay behind some of these UFO reports and things like that? Something that's not very often put out there in regard to theories involving UFOs. We hear interdimensionals, extraterrestrials, and even, you know, secret government craft. That's still one way that UFOs could be very close to home, closer than we probably even realize. Something to think about. I'm Micah Hanks. When we come back, we'll delve into, well, more weirdness right here on the Graylian Report.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
It's the unification of the esoteric and excellence. It's just the Graylian Report. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, joined in studio as always by Chris Hayes and engineer, the Reverend Matt Oakley. You know, we started getting into our typical heavy UFO talk. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. My typical UFO heavy talk during the last segment. But we always like to put it out there to the callers. If you'd like to call into the program, you can reach us 398-4886, area code 828. Again, that's 828-398-4886. And Skype users can reach us at Skype ID Graylian Report. We'll do open lines for the rest of the program. We're gonna touch on a few different subjects, but really you can call in and talk about whatever you want to. We've discussed government pre-crime units, minority report style, whether or not aliens would be good guys or bad guys, which I think is kind of a silly discussion. Right now we're going to talk a little bit about demonic possession. And I'm so thrilled to be able to say that we are joined in studio by a reverend of sorts, the Reverend Matt Oakley. He may not be the Marian kind of reverend, but he nonetheless...
Not yet.
Not yet. Oh,
not
yeah.
Yet.
I know about your plan. I know about you, you nefarious little devil, you.
Yeah.
Hate to call the reverend a devil, but, you know, Reverend, you had some interesting subject matter that you wanted to bring to the table during the final hour of tonight's program, where typically we save hour three for... having a little fun, open line callers and things like that. So why don't you tell us what is it that you wanted to bring to the table tonight? I understand this has to do something with demons. I think of demons sometimes.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to say it right. You got to say it.
I think of demons. How's that? Is that better?
Yeah, it's better.
Okay.
Yeah, it's time once again, ladies and gentlemen, for another one of the just absurd top 10 lists that are found all over the internet. And this one is titled, and this is on, if you want to look it up and follow along with us, it is ministeringdeliverance.com. And their whole slogan is helping the spiritually oppressed, over 250 ministries worldwide.
Okay, now I'll just tell you this. Now, hold on real quick. Now, I know that this is a potentially very serious subject. We are here at the Gray Lane Report take this fairly seriously. You know, my father's a minister. Your dad's very involved in the church. Chris here, you know, is a zombie. He's the living dead.
Heathen.
But I'll tell you this, that while we take this subject very seriously, I hate having to even give disclaimers here. There's not even any point in giving a disclaimer, but I'm going to say it anyway. We're having a little fun with this because I think some people take this beyond the point of absurdity. That said, we're not making fun of the entire notion of demonic possession. I think it's a very complex situation. I've seen some compelling evidence for that sort of thing myself over the years. But in a fun way, this is one of those instances where someone, I think, is taking it a little bit beyond the point of absurdity. You'll see what I'm talking about. Matt, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, and this article is entitled, What Are the Signs of Having a Demon? Am I Possessed? We all find ourselves asking that question at some point, I guess. I don't, but... And the headline, the little section above the top 10 list says, it's, you know... If you find someone struggling in these areas, it may not necessarily be a demon, but it's not uncommon at all to find a demon behind these things.
Oh, really not? Not uncommon.
Apparently not.
Really? 12 out of every 20 Americans may have struggled with demonic possession in their lives.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty astronomical number, but hey, you know.
But I would hope
I'm just the Graylian Reverend.
Well, you know, then again, though, considering all the ridiculous stuff I read about in the news every day. You know, hopefully before the end of this hour, we'll be able to get to a news story, which kind of deals with this same subject matter a little more seriously. You know, we'll have a little fun with it first, and then we'll look at a very strange report here before the end of the hour. I'll try and remember and fit that in. But you know, maybe there is a higher incidence of this sort of thing going on, whatever quote-unquote demonic possession may actually be. Again, I think just like, you know, you can't say that UFOs are all one thing. I think that reports of alleged demonic possession could be a variety of different things. Sometimes, clearly, there are people who have been afflicted by psychological disorders and the like. Then, in other instances, there are very inexplicable instances where people have allegedly, you know, spoken different languages and all kinds of stuff like that. You know, I'm not someone who's going to profess to say that all incidents of alleged quote-unquote possession stem from the same thing. But it might be a bit of a stretch to say that it's quite common for someone to be possessed by a demon. Okay.
Okay, and if you're ready, number one.
Get your rosaries and your, yeah. Your charms.
Your young priests and old priests. And
that's right.
Yeah.
Can I comment for every one of those that I've got?
Well, sure.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Which is all of them. Number one. Compulsive sinning against your will, addictions, uncontrollable anger, lust, urges to murder or commit suicide, etc.
Got it.
Okay, let me just jump in real quick on that one. You know, on Coast to Coast the other night, they were doing a program about, you know, the administration of antidepressants. Interestingly, people who had been prescribed certain antidepressants often began otherwise incredibly, you know, wonderful, you know, peaceful people would begin to exhibit, and display, very violent and sometimes murderous tendencies.
Well, look at that woman who was in the Asheville area several months ago and murdered two children.
But now that one was a little different. Okay, now again,
she was on antidepressants, though.
Well, she was.
Yes.
That's right. That's
several.
Right. She was. You're right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah, Matt, she was. But nonetheless, you remember what her reason for murdering her two children was?
Ghosts.
She said that there was a ghost. Now, I'm not endorsing the idea that she was a victim of demonic possession, but you know, if we were to examine any potential along that traditional understanding of quote unquote demonic possession, again, I mean, that would be a dead ringer for this sort of thing, and just a generally terrifying and very, very sad story.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd forgotten that there were indeed antidepressants involved there also. Yeah. So, okay.
Anyway, number two, mental torment. And this includes fear, depression, irrational heaviness in the soul, hearing voices in the mind, hearing audible voices that, and audible is spelled wrong, that nobody else hears, compulsive thoughts, insanity, mental illness, etc. Obsessive, irrational worry is almost always a demon. People who are scared stiff over the unpardonable sin are in need of counseling and likely deliverance.
Okay, no. Chris, I'm sorry. I've been rambling too much, so you go ahead and jump in here, but I do want to comment on that one also.
Oh, no. Got it. Except for the hearing voices.
Oh, you've got it. Unless,
yeah.
Well, no. I mean,
so far, I'm 2 for 2.
2 for 2. Okay. Well, but you know, they say that is almost always a demon, what you've just described. I don't think that's accurate either. I think, honestly, truly, the presence of fear, and even sometimes irrational fear, presents an incredible opportunity for growth. And I don't think that that is always necessarily a spiritual value or spiritual battle. I mean, I know it certainly can be, but I also, I know from my past experience that, you know, most often confronting fears of mine, I didn't feel like it was a battle with a demon, but it was, you know, basically allowing my logic, and I would say spiritual growth to win over, you know, what I perceived as a challenge in my life that really probably was not as great a threat to my, you know, advancement or well-being as I'd once perceived it as being. I couldn't count how many times I've, whether it be going into a job and thinking, you know, I'm just not going to be able to impress this person very well, or you know, whether it's, you know, writing an article or something and thinking, oh, these people are just going to reject this. They're not going to like my ideas because I'm really going out on a limb and putting my own ideas out there. 9 times out of 10 or better, when I confront my own fears and insecurities, I am better for it, and it's an opportunity for growth. I wouldn't say that we could say that that is often a demon, but, you know, and again, we don't want to rule that out. Okay, Matt, go ahead.
No, it's almost always
Always a demon, yes, okay.
Yeah. Number 3, emotional problems. If you're unable to get close to other people, sensing rejection for no reason, irrational emotional breakdowns, etc., often more than... And they misspelled it. They used the wrong then.
Chris, are you crying?
Often more than just casting out demons is needed in this category. Inner healing must also take place, as well as tearing down strongholds.
Matt, you're wait, hold on. Either you're exercising Chris right now, or he is just having an emotional breakdown.
Do you need me to put my hand on you?
He's turning red, and he's got his eyes. Look at this poor guy.
No, I just got it twice. Emotional problem.
We 3 for 3?
3 for 3.
Three for three, man. This probably not only almost perfectly describes myself, but any preteen girl or boy ever.
Yeah, I know, right?
Especially the girls, Chris.
Well, you know, I'm going to let you have that one.
Okay, No, never mind.
Oh, come on.
Go ahead.
Number 4, physical health problems. Arthritis, cancer, HIV, and a host of other illnesses are almost always caused by evil spirits. If it cannot be easily cured, then it is almost always a spirit that is causing it.
The devil gave you AIDS. HIV, yeah. The devil gave you cancer.
Does it list what church this person's from?
Hold on, let's not get into all that right now. Let's not get into that right now.
I just want to know.
You can contact them on your own time.
It's for the good of the show.
They're going to help you out. They're going to show you the way. Okay, but now let me just say real quick.
I'm afraid I don't have that one, I'm 3 for 4.
Here's an interesting way to look at this also. I once spoke with a man who told me that he believed a prominent UFO researcher and disclosure advocate, whose name I will not mention, but who got into some serious trouble earlier this year with the federal government for doing some events in a public park at night.
Mr. Parks and Rec
himself, yes. Stephen Greer. Oh, darn it, I wasn't going to say his name. Whoops. Matt, you're supposed to hit the 7-second delay. Damn it.
Sorry, it's broken.
Well, it's too late now. The cat's out of the bag. No, this individual, a friend of mine who's a fellow researcher, a former member of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, he had told me that he believed that... That Stephen Greer had actually been given cancer by evil government agents that were trying to silence him. Okay.
Is Satan an evil government agent?
Yes.
Duh.
My dad's not a phone! Have you never read the book by Nick Redfern? Have you never read that book, Matt?
I didn't read all of it because you wanted to. take it.
Actually, he doesn't have it, though. No, our field correspondent, Dallas Reese, well, Mike Reese actually has it right now. I gave it to him to read. But
you're talking about Final Events, right?
Final Events, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which
I only got part of the way through.
And the idea in that book is, you know, and see, even Nick Redfern, I've talked with Nick. I don't think Nick even really buys what they're saying. I don't know that I do either. In totality, but then again, I always argue that the line between what we perceive as spiritual and, you know, nuts and bolts unexplained via UFOs and these things, it's not always that clear. Now, I will say that, and anyone who's familiar with my writing and my work probably knows kind of what I'm talking about, especially when we get into the realm of things like tulpas and strange phenomena, you know, that can be both physical and non-physical at once. But anyway, that said, yeah, I loaned Mike, our one of our field correspondents, that book. It's a good read. It's interesting, and it basically deals with a group within the kind of overseen by the CIA called the Collins Elite that believes that UFOs are indeed demonic. And then Tim Beckley, actually, I wrote a short blurb in Tim Beckley's book. I've actually got it right over here in the studio. It's called "Brown Trip to Hell on a Flying Saucer," and it's got a picture of, you know, the prototypical devil, you know, on the front. And I think there's some sort of UFO thing there. So, yeah, you know, there are surprisingly connections between these two, and that's why I bring that up, because, you know, Jacques Vallée, back in the, in not the early days, per se, of his research, but I guess probably beginning in the 1960s and into the 70s, began to kind of examine the similarities between occult groups and UFOs and the dangers of what he called UFO cults. There are a lot of similarities there, and when you say that, you know, this organization talks about, you know, cancer and things like that, or even HIV infections and the sort of thing like this. I mean, obviously, a sexually communicated or transmitted disease, you know, is the result of demonic activity. It sounds to me probably like a person actually made some very bad decisions in terms of, you know, who they were associating with.
Demons.
Yes.
Demons, yeah.
Demons. Well, but the thing is that, and the point I'm trying to make is, it's easy to turn these things into scapegoats, aliens or devils, for what is afflicting us in our lives. Again, there is probably more often a tangible and very real physical explanation. And maybe not always. You know, I've also heard people who have said that they've been physically afflicted by what they felt were, you know, demonic forces and ghosts and spirits and the like. But I don't think that 9 times out of 10, again, that a person who's afflicted with some sort of a horrific disease is, you know, a victim of demonic presence. So,
well, here is my personal favorite on this list. Okay. I love this one. This is number 5, occult powers or abilities. And this says, anybody who can tell a fortune, lift an object through levitation, break a solid oak board with their hand, etc., using demonic powers, needs a deliverance. And here, this is so perfect.
Okay, lay it on us.
Martial arts are known, it's well known, that martial arts are known for using demonic powers to break boards. Wait,
are you reading this verbatim?
This is verbatim.
Oh my God.
And unnatural strength is a sign of demonic power, such as the man with the legion in the Bible. Which is kind of a vague reference, I think, too. But, you know,
listen, let me just tell you something. Okay,
wouldn't you think if you were under influence of a demonic presence, wouldn't that entity be using its, you know, powers and abilities to do something other than just break boards?
Break open.
Yeah, like something cool. If I get possessed by a demon, I want to start throwing fireballs. Never mind breaking wooden boards. It's fireballs or nothing.
Well, let me tell you this one. My dad's a minister, okay? He's a man of the cloth. He also holds a black belt in Goju-Ryu Okinawan, you know, style karate. He studied a variety of different styles of karate, and I've seen him break boards before as well. And I can guarantee you there was no demon that was helping him do that. Yeah, if these people made any sense...
How can we be sure?
How can we be sure, yeah.
I mean, was he throwing fireballs?
I guess my dad helping the homeless and praying for people and going to people's houses and blessing them and donating money to charities and going to church.
No, that's the number one trick the devil uses. You can't use that.
Yeah, I see. Exactly. Yeah. I'm sorry. In my opinion, I could be entirely wrong here, but whoever it is that put this top 10 list together for you there, they lost me at that one.
Well, I mean,
I don't think my father is possessed by a demon. I don't think the Reverend Hanks is, yeah, because he's a martial arts master. I'd like to get, where's our martial arts field correspondent, Tom Cameron? I don't know if I can get him right now. He's a He's based in Chicago. We're going to have him on the program here very soon. He's got a new book coming out and everything. But he told me, I've wanted to get him on the show already, and he said, well, I'll hold off until the book comes out. The book's almost, you know, ready for print, and I don't want to come on the show now and then come on again because that could be redundant. But, you know, I mean, that's the whole idea with this program is that we have field correspondents that sometimes come on rather regularly and give us updates about different things going on in different parts of the country. You know, I love that about this program. It's a totally different thing. We've got people all around who not just this country, all around the world, really, who join us on this program and give us their, you know, insights into you know, things happening, you know, on a global level. But anyway, that said, yeah, I'd love to get Tom Cameron, who also I happen to know is a very spiritual, religious man. I'd like to know his take on that one.
Okay, and I gotta say, number six, Chris, this is you. Do a T.
Now, Chris, are you still in keeping you? With the other one, the last one? Are we still like 5 for 5 or whatever?
I mean, no. Have you seen the feats of strength I've accomplished over the years?
Yeah, if we were the Fantastic Four here, you know, and Holly was Invisible Woman, you'd be like, you know, the Thing.
Of course. Yeah, that'd be strange. I'm far too pretty to be the Thing, though.
Yeah, and I'd be Reed Richards. Wait a minute, hold on. Am I going gray?
Can you stretch everywhere?
Yeah. Go ahead, Matt, on that.
Exactly, yeah. My point. Number six is unnatural desires and feelings.
Oh, I knew it.
Sexual attraction towards animals, unnatural sexual desires, unusually strong attractions towards somebody who is married, a past lover, etc.
No.
Can indicate soul ties and demonic bondage. Not sexual bondage, demonic bondage.
Oh. I like the other kind.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing is...
I knew it. There you go.
I saw you give emphasis to that strong attraction to someone who's married, table slap. No, see, what fit me to a T is someone who was married to me had a strong sexual attraction to someone else.
No, I thought it was the animals thing.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Well, now, this is one instance where, you know, and I very seldom do this, but I'm going to take this from a religious perspective here. My father, you know, in pastoral counseling... you know, often work with people. See, I think that this is the sad thing. I'm not saying that everybody should be polygamous and run around and, you know, have many loves, but I am saying that I think that, unfortunately, there are a lot of institutions in the United States today that that end up kind of repressing natural, you know, human desires. The institution of marriage is not so much one of those, but I think that the cultural pressures that lead a lot of young couples to get married... you know, I've known a lot of people who, you know, I mean, I'm 28 years old, okay, and I've never been married. But I've got a lot of friends who literally a decade ago were getting married. And I think that a lot of the time there was a strong cultural pressure on them to get married. 9 times out of 10, those marriages don't work out, okay? And unfortunately, I think that, you know, more often, you know, marriages with people, you know, under the age of 40 maybe in the United States don't tend to last very long statistically anymore anyway. But this is one area where I have noticed that, you know, especially in my father's case, you know, pastoral counseling would sometimes help them. And it's not like a religioso thing, you know. I think what it is that, you know, every now and then, understanding the nature of love, you know, C.S. Lewis wrote a wonderful book about that, you know, The Four Loves. Understanding the nature of love and the different forms that can take, you know, you can have a love for your fellow brothers, you know, a love for humanity. I talk about cosmic love all the time on the program and even when I'm on stage. Which is funny because when I'm performing at bluegrass festivals and stuff and I'm on stage going, cosmic love to you, brothers and sisters, people are like, what is he talking about? But a few people do get it. There are different kinds of love, you know, and I think that, you know, especially with, you know, watching my father over the years counsel married couples going through problems and things, a lot of the time there are these distractions and things that are going on in their lives. Maybe it's a sexual desire, you know, for someone else. Maybe it's this or that. These are things that people feel like they have to have in their lives, whereas in my experience, I've found that life can often be a lot more enriching in the absence of, you know, a lot of the things that people really prioritize in their lives. You know, sex, money, power, big house, fast car, these kinds of things, you know?
Well, yeah, but to go so far as to bring up, like, a past lover or relationship, that's pretty far, because who hasn't, you know, pined over a previous relationship?
Sure, I mean, and I've done that too, you know?
You know?
Now, I'm not saying that if you're a religious person that it's not something that you couldn't pray about, you know, but, you know, and with hope of trying to, you know, come to some sort of a, you know, some sort of, what it would be, I guess, maybe not clarity, but some sort of closure, you know, But again, I would say that maybe that's not exactly, you know, demonic. I think, you know, see, and it's funny,
it's
because...
human nature.
Yeah, maybe human nature indeed. So, I don't know. But, you know, again, I think it's really easy. I don't doubt that there are forces in this universe. You know, I'm even hesitant to call them angels, goblins, demons, all this crap, you know. The reason for that being is because I think that the profound reality, okay, especially on non-physical planes of existence, is so far beyond what humans are capable of understanding. And, you know, no offense to you, Chris, but, you know, I think that, you know, but you're not that kind of atheist, so, I mean, I'm not targeting you at all. I'm targeting directly the kind of people who say that they think that they know the nature of reality in the universe so well that they can presuppose that there are no great powers that could exist, or not even great powers, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Intelligences, sentient intelligences that could exist in a non-physical way. You know, these hardcore atheists that want to be a member of a club and presuppose that that is impossible, you know, even that, for instance, aliens exist on other planets. People who want to say that our understanding of science and knowledge is so complete and all wisdom is so complete that we know and we can tell you with certainty that you are crazy if you believe in aliens, ghosts, extraterrestrials, you know, God, any of this sort of stuff. You know, Chris, you're not that kind of person. I know that based on the conversation we had 15 minutes ago. But I... By the same token, I'm not going to be someone who, despite having an open mind to those kinds of possibilities, you know, I'm not going to try and attribute everything to religious happenings and spirituality. And it's so easy when we allow ourselves to let those things become scapegoats. Okay, like this article almost is advocating, when you allow those kinds of things, demonic possession and things like this, to become a scapegoat, what does it do? It conveniently removes from your life a reason for dealing with it in a logical and consistent way that might actually help you improve your life. You know, and that's where this sort of thing can become dangerous. I think any good pastor or priest would probably tell you the same, too.
Yeah. Well, since we don't have a whole lot of more time,
clock's about to catch us. Go ahead.
Let's get the last four in here. Number seven, experiencing the demonic. Most often, not always, but usually... And I love how it's so indefinite on this one, but they were positive on the other ones. When people are visited by demons, hearing them and seeing them, they're in need of deliverance. So if you got, like, cancer or something, you're pretty much positively possessed. But if you're hearing and seeing demons, it's possible, you know?
You might want to get it checked out. Yeah. If you can.
So, eight. Ancestors have similar problems. If both you and one or more of your ancestors have the same kind of problems, then there may be a generational spirit at work. Let's see. Nine. Obsessions. Driving interests in the occult. Demons and creatures of the dark. Get this. Such as wolves, owls, etc. can indicate a demonic bondage.
So, you know, if you're a if you're a wildlife biologist and you study owls or wolves, you may be a victim.
Satan.
Oh, okay.
So obsession with death is almost a sure sign of demonic bondage as well.
So if you are a coroner, if you are the county coroner.
Satan.
Okay. I see. What if, what if, for instance, you were a med student and you were, studying, you know, like cadavers and things like that.
That's something I'd have to think of. No, Satan.
You think so?
I think so.
Yeah, I'll see. See, this is where, man, I'm telling you. Is that number 10, by the way?
No, number 10.
Oh, I hit it. Go ahead.
Last one.
All right.
Compulsive behavior. Compulsive behavior such as cutting is a biblical symptom of demonic bondage. It doesn't really go any farther than that. So that may be the only compulsion one would have.
They don't list, like, you know, compulsive, you know, touching your, you know, your wee wee or your woo woo and you know, in public places and things.
Only if Chris, Cheetos are involved.
Chris?
Yeah. Cheetos.
Chris, can we count that in the category for you?
Which compulsion was it again?
Compulsively wanting to touch yourself.
Quit that. I don't compulsively want to touch myself.
I just do it.
I mean, really? If you don't touch yourself, you're probably possessed by a demon.
Wait a minute. Oh. Okay, well, I guess it depends on what
you don't know how to love yourself. How's anybody else expected to?
Oh, you went there. No, again, you know, I think, you know, this is really shaky ground. This is where you can, this can truly lead to, you know, people not dealing with problems in an effective way by virtue of allowing the perception of some demonic presence, and, you know, to become a scapegoat. And I'm, again, you know, I'm not going to be a person who will tell you that you know, demons and things like that either do or do not exist, and do or do not involve themselves in people's lives and living. You know, there are some pretty interesting cases that involve, you know, alleged demonic possession. But I will tell you this, my friends, I think we need to proceed with caution when it comes to allowing oneself to believe that that is probably what is causing all the problems in your life. In fact, I think you might be a little better if you were willing to...
Either that or a voodoo curse.
Right, exactly. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think I'd lean probably more heavily toward a voodoo curse than I would demonic possession. You know, not that everyone would do it, but many people in the world today would be just as fine allowing that to be their explanation for everything. Then they don't have to deal with it in the real world, right? That's a shame. On the Mouth of the South, this is the Graylian Report. We'll be back right after this for our final segment of this week's program.
Want to have some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. Listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the InceptionRadioNetwork.com. We'll see you there.
No, Matt, that's not what I'm saying. No, Matt, that's not what I'm saying. I'm sorry. We got to do a radio program. Okay, welcome back to the program. This is our final segment of the this week's show. It is the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Chris Hayes and the ever-loving Reverend back there, Mr. Matt Oakley. Rocking out to some of the tunes of our good buddies Rat Jackson, Will and Kurt Arledge, along with Steve Oliva and the enigmatic Rusty Sutton. Fantastic group. If you'd like to have your music featured on the Graylian Report, you can email engineer@graylianreport.com. Matt Oakley is the man who handles the music here for the program. You can send your stuff along to him. Now, we will be picky, but we are always willing and interested in featuring people's music on the program when we can, because we like good music, and of course, you know, in the future there are going to be a lot of changes. Let me just tell you that. This past week has been a formative experience for us here at the Graylian Report. And thanks to our friends Ben and Aaron, I think we're going to be looking at a situation where we will be able to continue to provide the podcast as planned. Hopefully that will be within the next day. I'd said by the end of the week, but, you know, things tend to move very quickly in radio time, despite the fact that time doesn't actually exist, right? That's okay. But anyway, so in addition to being able to continue providing a podcast for listeners like you, because I think a large portion of our listenership actually are the ones who download the podcast. We have a good few people who tune into the program live each week, and we're trying to grow that audience more and more, but part of growing that audience is going to be migrating away from our present streaming service, which is Ustream. We want to make this independent and, begin to provide... here's what we envision. I don't want to speak too soon, but we're envisioning, you know, paranormal news coverage from around the world. You know, live, engaging talk radio that you can listen to and that you can download and carry with you and stream on your iPhones and things like that. Anywhere around the world, at any time, 24/7. You know, we'd feature music, we'd feature commentary, opinion, and of course, it would be an operation, that would be housed right here at Graylian International. It would be our flagship station, so to speak, the Graylian Report. I've worked in radio for a number of years, and I swore after I got out of actually working in radio that I would love to continue doing this. But if I'm going to do anything seriously, I'm going to do it on my own terms. That's just the way I operate. So hopefully, my friends, there will be good things in the future. And with that, well, we better wrap things up. On behalf of John Anderson, Dick Oakley, Holly, Stephen Accounting, the Reverend Matt Oakley, our producer Chris Hayes, and of course, yours truly, Micah Hanks, and all our fine field correspondents. Special thanks to Anya Briggs for joining us tonight on the program with her fantastic commentary. We depend on people like you out there on the world abroad to bring us, news and insights from different corners of the globe to help us come to a better understanding of reality right here. I'm Micah Hanks, the Mouth of the South, and it is the Graylian Report. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And as always, friends, stay strange.